This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
This is It Was a Thing on TV.
Spoiler number one is Dr. Lee Franz. It stinks.
What is going on? What is going on?
Episode 57, Submission 011, The Duck Factory. The Duck Factory aired on NBC from April 12th to July 11th of 1984 for 13 episodes.
Most folks think that it's a strange occupation. Some folks call it a deranged aggregation. Dad said he'd rather I become a beautician, but we can't help it. We just have it his way. Cause it sure beats working for a living. It ain't much to live in these days. It sure beats working for a living. We're just happy this way.
Okay, back to work.
Okay, so The Duck Factory. This was the first sitcom starring a young Canadian improv comedian and actor who had just moved to Los Angeles in, I guess, the most ironic case of art imitating life. And today, that young man is Jim Carrey.
You mean Dr. Robotnik?
Yep.
Dr. Robotnik?
Dr. Robotnik. I'm talking Dr. Robotnik. I'm talking Ace Ventura. I'm talking Bruce Almighty. I'm talking...
Venus de Milo.
I'm talking Venus de Milo. I'm talking Lloyd Christmas.
Yeah.
Mike here. I know it's Vera de Milo, not Venus de Milo. I hope you understand.
Jim Carrey, his first sitcom was about a cartoon studio. You would think that Jim Carrey gets to be all sorts of goofy. We'll get there, because there's still a lot more to talk about vis-a-vis the background of this show, which was basically created by Alan Burns. Do you know who Alan Burns is? Magnum opus was?
No idea.
You've never heard of Rhoda?
Really?
He co-created it with James L. Brooks.
Whoa.
So, again, out of the gate. Oh, and this show was produced by Mary Tyler Moore's production company, MTM. So, yeah, Alan Burns, MTM, Jim Carrey, this thing has guts from the beginning, right? Again, we're getting there.
Well, Chico, since you mentioned Mary Tyler Moore and given what network this was on, I have a good idea of who greenlit this series.
It was her husband that was running the network.
Well, for whatever that's worth, it didn't go much of anywhere. Skip Tarkenton, much like the guy who plays him, Jim Carrey, is a naive greenhorn fresh off the bus to Hollywood. Only Skip has a bunch of talent in the drawing and writing phase of the industry, which is good because the studio that he sent it to, his founder's dead.
Oh.
And I should also add, if you watch the first episode, that is exactly what you see in the first moments of the first episode. So that's not really a promising way of starting your show. You've got everybody carrying the casket of the animation company's founder. That's sort of a downer, especially for what you'd think would be a cheery show about cartoons, or at least animation.
Yeah, that's either very depressing or just a missed gag. It's like, yeah, I'm here to see Buddy Winkler. They point to the coffin. Oh.
Whoops.
Yeah, not a good start to the show.
Yeah. So they need some fresh eyes. They need some fresh ink. Against all sorts of reservation, the remnants of Buddy Winkler production decide to hire Skip On. And, of course, their main cartoon is the Dippy Duck Show. So, guess what Skip calls it? The Duck Factory.
Okay.
That makes sense now. Alright, but unless you think he's the only duck of the bunch, there are other ducks. Brooks Carmichael, who is the person left in charge of the Duck Factory, is played by Jack Gilford.
And if you don't recognize the name, oh my gosh, you recognize the face, because he was on, like, everything back in the 70s and 80s. He was on Golden Girls. I believe he was one of the boyfriends of one of the characters. He played an enemy on Future Installment, an episode of Future Installment, the last season of Get Smart, the CBS season, which is really bad, but we'll talk about that later this year. He also portrayed an alien on Soap. I believe that was in season 3. So he's definitely gotten... Yeah.
That's the alien baby storyline, isn't it?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh,
he was on a whole lot of stuff. We're talking about The Love Boat, Night Court, Golden Girls, Head of the Class. He was on it all.
He was in Cocoon.
He was in Cocoon.
He was in everything. Well, I shouldn't say everything, but again, he's one of those people you may not recognize the name, but when you see the face, you're like, I know who he is.
Oh, that guy. Oh, that guy.
Yeah, that guy.
He's a classic case of, oh, that guy. And then you have Andrea Lowen, played by Nancy Lane, who was on a lot of stuff in the 80s, including Future Installment Roomies. I don't know what that is either.
Well, she was also on... Well, you just mentioned it a few moments ago. She was on Rhoda for a brief while.
Mm-hmm.
But also she was on Angie.
Future Installment Angie.
So she was definitely a veteran. And also she had been on Match Game in the late 70s / early 80s, Password Plus. She made the rounds. She was definitely a known entity, as they would say.
Yes. Also a known entity, at least nowadays, is Marty Fenneman, played by Jay Tarsus, who is known more on the industry side of things nowadays. But way back when he was on Future Installments, Open All Night.
And that's coming up really soon, too. So buckle in for that. That one's going to be a fun show.
Oh, I can't wait for that.
Well, he also created... Is this a Future Installment? I'm sure this has to be. The Slap Maxwell story.
That's got to be on the list.
If that isn't on the list, it's got to be on the list.
And then you have Wally Wooster, who is played by perhaps one of the biggest voice actors in the game. I mean, we are talking Scooby-Doo himself, Don Messick. Yes, that Don Messick.
Yeah, you can't argue that he's one of the best of all time.
As far as Hanna-Barbera's cast of characters, he is one of the goats. He, of course, Wally Wooster voiced Dippy Duck on the Dippy Duck Show. So it would stand to reason Don Messick also played Dippy Duck. Next is Aggie Aylesworth, who is played by Julie Payne. who is on future installment Wizards and Warriors.
What? They made a game, they made a movie based on...
No, the TV show predated the game by 3 years.
What?
Yeah.
Well, Julie Payne was also on another future installment, Leo and Liz in Beverly Hills.
Mm-hmm.
And really, that's just about her career right there in two shows. Well, she did a little bit more, but...
So, like I said, she was on a lot of shows that were 13 and out. Well, no more than 13 and out. How about that?
Yes, they did not exceed 13 episodes.
Okay, then you have Clarence Gilliard Jr., who plays Roland Culp. Of course, Clarence Gilliard, you know him more for his work on Walker, Texas Ranger.
Wait, is he the old man?
No, he's the black dude.
Okay, never mind then.
You're thinking of Noble Willingham.
Okay, yes, that's right.
He was also a character actor. He was on Different Strokes, Facts of Life, 227, Simon and Simon, Riptide. He was even on a commercial for McDonald's. I wonder if he was Calvin. I don't know.
Wasn't as great as that commercial with Jason Alexander and the DLT, I'll tell you that much.
And Mike, this is the one you were waiting for.
Oh, yeah.
You really saved the best for last. I need to tell you.
I totally do. Okay, the widow of the ditzy widow and the new president, CEO, and head of Buddy Winkler Productions, Mrs. Sherry Winkler, Teresa Ganzel.
What can we say about Teresa Ganzel? Oh, my God.
More than that, Mike.
I'm sorry?
You could say more than that.
Oh, there's a lot you can say about her. Obviously, she's been like a game show staple of the 80s. She was a winner on previous installment, $1.98 Beauty Show. She was also one of Art Fern's, she was Art Fern's tea time lady, I believe, after Carol Wayne passed, again, talking 80s and up until his retirement in the early 90s. But on top of that, and I don't know if Chico met her, 14 years ago?
I might have.
She was an absolute sweetheart of a person. She was absolutely darling, absolutely gorgeous. I mean, I can't say enough good stuff about her. She is truly one of the good people in the world.
And Mike's hashtag WCW, only it's Saturday. Your woman crush Wednesday.
Oh, I thought you meant World Championship Wrestling.
No. That's
I was gonna say, Chico, where's the Four Horsemen?
You find a fourth and we'll invite him. No.
I think she wrestled for the International Championship once or twice.
Nah.
So she wrestled Ravishing Rick Rude then? Oh, makes sense.
Anywho!
So yeah, you have the gist of the show, you have the cast of the show. Now let's get down... Oh, wait, we forgot to establish titles to everything. Wally Wooster, he was the chief voice artist. He played Dippy Duck. And Marty Fenneman was a writer. Brooks Carmichael and Roland Culp were the artists. Andrea Lewin was the editor. And Aggie Ellsworth was the business manager. That makes sense, right? I think we have all of our things covered.
Yeah, yep. I think you got it.
That's all. It's like all of our bases are covered. Except, well, again, it only lasted 13 episodes. Do we want to talk about the 13 episodes?
Yeah, we'll talk about the 13 episodes and why it didn't survive. I think we already partially covered that. briefly looking at the episodes, episode one, we mentioned that Skip Tarkenton just moved to L.A. And was eager to get into the cartoon business. However, well, when he arrived at the studio, as we mentioned, the owner or founder of the cartoon studio was being carried into a hearse. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's not really a positive, optimistic opening to a TV show.
No, it isn't.
No, especially when you have this lighthearted opening. And I don't know if it was on the first show. It would definitely would not be appropriate for the first show. But on later shows, the opening, there's an animated opening, very effervescent, very vivacious.
It was wacky.
It was wacky. You could say that too. But it sort of set the scene for being a goofy, funny TV show. And if that aired in episode one, that would be kind of weird. But also at the same time, if it didn't air in episode one, yeah, how are you supposed to sort of measure the wackiness factor? But also, again, how wacky can you be when the owner of the production studio is being carried into a hearse?
Yep. And the other owner is, well, Teresa Ganzel.
Boy, have I ever told you about Teresa Ganzel?
No, Mike, we are not doing that again.
No.
And then episode two was called Filling Buddy's Shoes. Obviously, Buddy's now gone. Who's going to run the show? And Skip's got bigger issues than that because Skip is now living in a back room at the studio. He doesn't have an apartment at this point. And things are not going well for him. His waterbed breaks. And, you know, it's the 80s. Yeah, waterbeds are a thing. And because of that, his clothes got all wet. And, well, the solution was, here, you've got Buddy's clothes. So why don't you put on Buddy's clothes and, you know, nobody will notice. Except everybody noticed he's wearing Buddy's clothes.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. So that didn't go over terribly well. And then episode three, The Annies. A series of mishaps arise when the staff attend The Annies. Oh, it's an award show. Yeah. Where Buddy is to receive a posthumous award.
Yeah, The Annies are basically the equivalent of the Oscars in the animation world.
Mm-hmm.
Is that true that the Annies are actually a real award?
Yeah, it's actually a thing. Yep.
I definitely believe that they were an award. I didn't know that was a real award for the purposes of this show. That's kind of interesting, giving it a sense of realism.
Yes.
Very cool. Episode four, No Good Deed. Skip learns that no good deed goes unpunished when he gives Ginger a job she doesn't deserve and Marty's script a kinder review than it deserves.
Yeah, he pretty much overpraises his coworkers. He doesn't want to hurt anybody's feelings, is basically the gist of that episode.
Episode 5, The Way We Weren't. Aggie plans to attend a reunion with her old Navy pals, but when she can't scrounge a date, she has Skip to accompany her, and then hilarity possibly ensues.
Yeah. Because it's like, it was one of those things. You expect Jim Carrey to be peak Jim Carrey, but we haven't gotten there yet.
Well, that's actually one thing I'm noticing thus far is you don't see a real breakout role for Jim Carrey here. Plus also, really, the plots thus far are very basic. They're sort of boilerplate sitcom type of plots. Nothing really unique at this point.
And it doesn't really lend itself to a combination animation / live action sitcom.
We'll get to that in a little bit too. Episode 6, Can We Talk? Marty's plagiarism becomes Skip's problem. Don't plagiarize, kids.
No.
Yeah, my students, that's one of their favorite pastimes is plagiarism, but enough about my life.
Yeah.
Episode 7, The Education of Mrs. Winkler, a.k.a. The Education of Cherie Winkler, written sort of like MASH with asterisks between every letter. In hopes of being smarter, Cherie decides to finally get her high school diploma, and Birch gives her a helping hand and a little something extra.
Did she go to the Ty Lookwell School of getting extra favors that need extra attention?
Oh, no.
By the way, fun fact, this episode aired May 24th, 1984, the day before I was born.
I don't know what the takeaway there is.
No, I just thought I'd point that out.
Okay. Episode 8, Ordinary People 2. Skip helps come up with the cash to fund Andrea's film project, yet doesn't get the thanks one might think. Boy, I've been there. You give them an inch and they take you for a mile.
Oh, boy. That's like the story of my life.
Yeah, I think we've all been there. But, I mean, at the very least, a film project, you'd think at the end he would get some sort of thanks.
Yep.
Unless the type of thanks he wanted comes from the Ty Lickwell School of Sexual Favors.
No, it's the Ty Lickwell School of Extra Favors that Need Extra Attention, Mike.
I was in the realm. I'm sorry.
He didn't say he wanted sexual favors. He just said that, and then the people at the auto shop thought he was implying sexual favors.
It was the 80s. We know what they're asking for. You didn't thank me. Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you. No, I don't mean that way. I mean...
You didn't thank me.
I mean in my pants.
With my privates.
Episode 9, It Didn't Happen... Oh, speaking of pants, it didn't happen one night. Oh! The gang begins to suspect that Skip and Andre are romantically involved. Meanwhile, Marty isn't happy about his new girlfriend, Cherie. Ooh, inter-office relationships. That never ends well. Okay, no comments.
Okay.
Okay, oh, here's an interesting episode. The duck stops here. Wally decides to throw his hat into the Shakespeare ring after his dippy duck voice escapes him.
Uh-oh.
I think we saw that in the episode of Greg the Bunny where Warren the Ape tries doing Hamlet in front of Gary Oldman.
Didn't work for him. Doesn't work for Wally.
Well, he was just contractually bound to Sweet Knuckle Junction, so... maybe Wally didn't have a contract. Who knows? Episode 11, The Children's Half Hour. It's children's night at the Apollo when Brooke's son and Wally's daughter both want to further their artistic careers to the joy of Brooks and the dismay of Wally. Now you'd think that a parent would want to see their kids continue in the family business. Well, not necessarily family business, but follow their footsteps in that line of work. And one was happy and the other was not. This episode title hits too close to home. You always love the one you hurt.
Ooh.
Roland is pressured to quit the animation business and follow in his father's footsteps as a dentist. Meanwhile, the staff consider changing the show when a parents' group voted one of the most violent kids' programs on TV.
Hold up. Are you serious?
How are ducks violent? This is not a violent TV show.
This is not a violent TV show. It's animated cartoon happy fun. Come on now.
Yeah, you've got dancing hippos in the opening montage, for heaven's sakes. Dancing hippos. Duck. Yeah, dancing hippos and ducks are not violent creatures, at least not in this world. And then the last episode is Call Me Responsible. The ball is in Skip's hands when the show needs someone to fight for it at the network, or it will be canceled. Well, guess what? It was canceled. Well, I mean, the Duck Factory was canceled. Interesting The show originally aired on Thursday nights at 9:30. Now, I'm going to pose a hypothetical to you. If this premiered a year later, with Cheers really getting off the ground, with The Cosby Show on Thursday nights premiering in 1984, fall of 84, I should add, and also with Family Ties, do you think that the Duck Factory somehow gets some traction?
Yes.
A little really? Bit, yeah.
Okay, I was very unimpressed with the show. It's just a very interesting hypothetical, because what actually happened is right near the end of the run, it was in June of 84, Duck Factory moved from Thursday nights at 9:30 to Wednesday nights at 9:30, and the show that was at Wednesday night at 9:30 moved to Thursday at 9:30, a little show called Night Court.
And the rest and the history.
Yeah, the rest is history. And Night Court did not have good ratings for starters, but obviously once you're following Cheers and you have Family Ties and Cosby Show before that, you're sort of carrying the night, or you're sort of being carried by the ratings of those three shows, even if you're bad, which Night Court, I mean, if you've listened to this podcast.
In its infancy, Night Court was struggling, I guess you could say.
Well, Night Court had a number of issues, if you've listened to this podcast long enough, you know how much I like Night Court. And, you know, unfortunately, it didn't find its footing until probably season three. As I jokingly say, once they found a bailiff who could survive a full season.
Yeah.
Well, that would be season four, actually.
Yeah, well, that's when Marsha Wolffield's on.
Well, yeah, but also you didn't have Marky Post. And that's true. And you didn't have
Marky Post. You didn't have Charlie Robinson. You didn't have that was pretty much it.
Yeah, I mean, you had Selma Diamond, and they were good, but you just didn't have that cohesion, that chemistry until season three, season four, and then it was just a house on fire for a good four or five seasons, even if the ratings didn't necessarily say so in seasons seven and eight.
Which we'll get to on a future podcast.
Yeah, and then, you know, season nine, the final season, is another one of those entries of a show that lasted one season too long. But again, I'm talking way too soon and giving way too much up. But yeah, so the Duck Factory ended up on Wednesday nights at 9:30 for the remainder of its run, which was not terribly long. It was probably in the range of about four, five, six episodes at most. And the ratings definitely did not merit a renewal. It ranked 64th.
I'm guessing about 80-ish or 90-ish TV shows.
I don't have the number in front of me, but it was fair to say it was in the bottom third.
Yeah, interesting thing, though. I'm looking at the IMDb page, and there's a bunch of wink, wink, nod, nod, nudge, nudge to the animation industry. Some of the guest stars include Kenneth Mars, Keone Young, and a guy by the name, you may have heard of him, guys, Frank Welker.
Oh, yeah.
I've heard of him. Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah. And another lady, you may have heard of her, some nice lady by the name of June Foray.
Oh, yeah. We just lost her recently within the last about two or three years.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you definitely had, like, I'd almost say the Mount Rushmore of cartoons, if you take away Mel Blanc, and I'm sure there's one or two other voices I'm forgetting, but when you're talking about June Foray, who was Rocky in Rocky and Bullwinkle, and Frank Welker, you know, it's almost like Don Messick. What didn't he do?
Yeah. In fact, Frank Welker and Don Messick would work together on the Scooby-Doo series. Frank Welker plays Fred, and Don Messick played Scooby. Yes, Frank Welker did human voices once upon a time.
Well, is there anything else you want to add, Chico?
Only that for a lot of its sort of dependency on animation, you would kind of expect it to be at least partly animated.
That's the other drawback. That's the other thing I wanted to mention is you're focusing on a cartoon, yet how much animation are you actually showing?
Not much.
Very little. Yeah.
It's like Lizzie McGuire did it better, and actually Student Bodies from the late 90s also did it better.
Yeah, and I know this is not
a 9-3, the thing of it is, and if you think about it, Student Bodies is basically what happens if a Saved by the Bell and the Duck Factory had a baby while on holiday in Canada.
Yikes.
Mm.
Yeah, I don't know if the animation would have helped. It aired at 9:30, which, yeah, a little bit late for the kids to be watching. So maybe it was meant to be a more adult-oriented show. But it just reminds me of another show that was set in an animation studio. And I don't remember much animation on this show, too. And that might be part of the reason why it died. I'm speaking of future installment Bob.
Bob.
The Bob Newhart show 3 years or so after Newhart.
Yeah, I think that was actually a comic book he was writing.
Well, yeah, it's still in the same field, yeah. Animation, cartoons, yeah.
Yeah, and a thing of it is this show is, again, one of those shows that it was too serious for a comedy, but too comic for a drama. It was a dramedy in an era where dramedies did not exist yet.
Yeah, because dramedies wouldn't really be a thing until 30-something.
Yeah, yep. And that would be a good 3, 4, 5 years later, yeah. Well, if that's it, I've got one more thing to add.
What's that?
It's time for eBay Price is Right. Okay, guys, today's item, it's 3 cells from the Duck Factory.
Ooh!
They're 3 cells. This sold, I believe, back in March. And the 3 cells, 2 of them are the Duck Factory logo. One looks like it's zoomed in a little more than the other. And the third one has a duck holding a broom. And in the back, stenciled in pencil, outlined in pencil, it says starring Jim Carrey. But that's not part of the cell. That's like a piece of paper or some material behind it, okay?
Certificate of authenticity sort of thing?
It gives it authenticity because it's written in the same style as the logo. With how do you describe it? Just goofy animation, that goofy kind of font.
Hmm.
So yeah. There's 3 cells. You've got 2 with the name of the TV show. You've got 1 with a duck holding a broom with starring Jim Carrey and pencil behind it. And as I said, this sold back in March, if I do remember correctly. And we will start with Greg. How much do you think these 3 cells sold for on eBay?
I will say $47.99.
$47.99. Okay. Chico.
I'm going to go with $58.
Ooh, you're giving him $10 and a penny there. Oh, will that hurt? Well, the actual price these 3 sills sold for is $99.
What? Are you kidding me?
$99. Really? $99.
That's a lot for some plastic with some oil on it.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, but you know what? I would pay even more than that for cells of different cartoons. I don't know if I'd necessarily pay that much for the Duck Factory, But if somebody put up a cell from any number of shows from the 60s or 70s, just one cell, I'd pay, you know, maybe $200. Mm. Also, I'm sure it's supply and demand. Are Duck Factory cells really in demand?
Not really. No.
Well, it could be something for the museum.
Could be.
Well, that was another installment of eBay Price is Right.
Yep. What can I say about the Duck Factory? Again, a dramedy in an age where dramedies did not exist. Jim Carrey on television? Are you kidding me? Well, gotta tell you, in 1984, it was a thing on TV.
And there weren't cartoons. I mean, that would be a bummer. I don't remember this show growing up, but it's like, okay, if you're doing a show that's set in an animation studio, you'd think there might be a subplot where, oh, well, we're working on this week's cartoon and Dippy Duck is going to, you know, get a job or you know, whatever. And you'd think they'd have some sort of, I'm sorry, I'm done arguing. Well, I'm done arguing.
I'll tell you right now, the season finale of The Blacklist is doing more animation than your typical episode of The Duck Factory.
Yeah, that's very true, because watching some of these episodes, as I said, in a number of shows, the only animation was done in the opening credits. Mm-hmm. And I didn't even stick around for the closing credits to see if that was animated too, which it could have been, but still, if you're talking 30 seconds on each side, that's a minute of animation. That's not a whole heck of a lot. But also, we need to remember animation costs money.
Yes.
That might be a reason. That might be a reason it got canceled too, or at least didn't do that much animation. Is animation costs money? Was Night Court cheaper in the end? It is getting better ratings, so yeah, it isn't just a ratings game; it's also a money game. So
yeah,
but enough analysis of the television business. Hey, we got a website. Did you know that?
Really, we have a website, Mike.
I'm not kidding you. Yeah.
Is it? It was a thing on TV.com?
Oh my gosh! It's like you've been there once or twice.
Does it have all of our social feeds and and all of our past episodes?
Every last one.
Oh man!
And also, it's got our email address. Please feel free to email us and let us know how we're doing, or if you've got suggestions, please send them our way. It's at contact@itwasathingontv.com. Yep. Until
all right, you know what? I'm just gonna speak for Mike and Greg for a moment. We always say like, comment, subscribe, and share, because sharing is caring. You're gonna want to do all this and more to the next episode, because this episode is the primary reason why the three of us are here doing this.
Yes. More or less, yes. I would agree with that. And this is one that has been definitely a work in progress for the last, 8 months?
Yes.
7 months? Yes.
And I've made damn sure that this episode and this show is going to get the attention it deserves, damn it.
This is Greg's magnum opus. This is his shining moment. I don't care what you say about Tag Team. This is going to be like 10 times better than Tag Team, I think.
Oh, yes. At the end of the show, we're going to have Luther Vandross singing One Shining Moment.
Oh, jeez. I can't promise that, but we can promise you that. Oh, yeah. The next show, at least one of us has definitely done our homework on that show.
Yes. And I guarantee you, this episode will leave you #1-800-235-DEAD. Literally.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Place to Be Nations, JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have over 24 podcasts available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. We now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, we dive into topics running the gamut from today's WWE to the glory days of yesteryear and the ins and outs of the territory days. In addition to our full-length shows, we also deliver to you special pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to Be Nation Pop feed is a veritable treasure trove of great content, offering tremendous shows covering the land of movies, television, life, comics, and sports, brought to you by the most knowledgeable and insightful folks in the podcast world.
You can find all these great shows, plus archives of our past podcasts from over the past 8 years, as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while you're there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlaceMination.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects, and much more. Be sure to support our site by using www.PlaceMination.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping. We want to thank our friends at Boneheads, Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com as well. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr. PlaceMination.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Episode 58, Submission 013, Second Chance 1987/Boys Will Be Boys. Second Chance 1987/Boys Will Be Boys aired on Fox between 1987 to 1988. Second Chance 1987 running for 9 episodes from September 26, 1987 to November 28, 1987, and Boys Will Be Boys running for 12 episodes from January 16, 1988 to May 7, 1988 for an overall total of 21 episodes.
It's Second Chance, Hollywood's most exciting new game.
No, not the game show Second Chance. I mean the other Second Chance.
You've been through something. I don't want you to be afraid.
Do I look afraid?
My name's Mary. Do you know who you are?
Mike, not the Second Chance from 2016 on Fox. I meant the Second Chance from 1987 on Fox.
I'm Charles Russell. In the year 2011, I died and found myself in St. Peter's office. He told me I wasn't good enough for heaven or bad enough for hell. I was sent back to Earth in the year 1987.
Who are you?
Don't just stand there, Charles. Say hello to yourself.
If I had a second chance, tell me where would I take it? How different would I make it? I gotta go back, back to yesterday somehow. I gotta go back, find what I know now. And I should have
That's better, Mike. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Yeah, so, guys, it's been 58 episodes, but we are finally on this show. And, guys, back in September of last year, I discovered this show in an episode of the YouTube series 13 Week Theater, and this became the genesis for what became our podcast.
He's absolutely right about the origin story.
Yep. And now you know the rest of the story.
Yeah. And you know what was the clincher of this series that sums it all up in a nutshell? An ad in TV Guide that says, "Find the dead man in this picture." Yes, this is a comedy.
Wait, it's a TV ad and not an episode of Idiot Test?
So a little background here.
Second Chance was created by the writing team of David W. Duclon and Gary Mentier, who have been responsible for Punky Brewster, for one, and Silver Spoons for another, and I'm sure there's more. Family Matters. Thank you, Brains.
Yes! Family Matters, of course. So they were the masters in the sitcom game.
There's one show that you're missing, Chico, that he produced three episodes of, which more or less is almost the run of the show, I think. Future installment, Making It.
Oh.
Making It.
Yeah.
Speaking of theme songs that are bops.
Yeah, the David Naughton show. That one, yeah. But yeah, speaking of themes that, well, I wouldn't necessarily call it a bop, but that's a Chico term. But yeah, this is one of those themes that sort of lingers with you.
So the premise of the first version of this show, Second Chance, we open at St. Peter's office on July 29th, 2011, when St. Peter meets a man by the name of Charles Russell, who had died while driving his hover car in an accident on the Santa Monica Skyway. And
Probably while texting.
Yeah, well, they didn't know that in 1987. They didn't know you could message somebody on a phone. It was that far distant in the future. But yeah, probably he was texting while driving. And on a Skyway, no less.
Doing 250 miles an hour.
Yeah.
I think that was the right speed, right?
Yep. Yeah, it was probably a better ending for him than Herb Abrams.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, my gosh.
He's not wrong, ladies and gentlemen.
Okay, so St. Peter determines that Charles Russell is not good enough for heaven or hell. So what he does is he sends him back to 1987, where he gets a second chance to help his younger self learn the difference between right and wrong.
And that is the gist of the series. Well,
yes.
Not necessarily all of it. He becomes a proprietor of a convenience store and a boarder in the second episode, which we will get to.
Yep.
And sort of the surrogate father figure to Chaz. They even take up against each other, which makes me wonder if Charles Russell didn't go back in time and take up some of Chaz's sort of little quirks, would he have had those quirks?
I don't know. It's weird. Well, I mean, he does grow up to become Charles Russell, so maybe he's had it all this time?
Maybe, but hey, probably the only time in this podcast where we get to mention the bootstrap paradox.
Well, Charles Russell was played by Kyle Martin, who you would better know from Hill Street Blues. And I believe Hill Street Blues would have just ended its run at this time, right?
Yep.
Yep. And you might be wondering who played the younger version of Charles Russell Chaz. It was this young kid from Canada. He did a bunch of other shows, and I don't know whatever became of him. Some guy named Matthew Perry.
Matthew Perry of a million different future installments until he struck gold in 1994. Anyway.
And a million future installments after.
Yeah.
So rounding out the rest of the cast, you have Randy Heller, who you'd best know as the mother of Daniel LaRusso in The Karate Kid, playing Chaz's mother, Helen.
Hmm.
No joke there, Chico?
No. I got nothing. All I remember her is that one episode of Super Train.
You mean past installments?
Previous installment, Super Train.
So when you have a sitcom about a young kid who needs to learn the difference between right and wrong, who better to showcase the struggles that young Chaz Russell must deal with than his two best friends, Booch and Eugene?
Of course, Booch being played by William Gallo, and Eugene being played by Damian Slade.
And what else would Damian Slade be best known for?
If I'm not mistaken, he was in a movie. I do not remember what the movie is called.
Okay, he was in Better Off Dead, and he's the kid who pesters John Cusack that he wants his $2. By the way, guys, funny I should mention Better Off Dead, since the guy who directed it was Savage Steve Holland, who's best known for making the whammies on Pressure Luck. And what was Pressure Luck a revival of?
Second Chance.
Yes.
Oh,
and, by the way, what preceded Second Chance on Fox? Mike, do you want to take a guess?
I no.
Future installment, The New Adventures of Beans Baxter. Because Savage Steve Holland executive produced The New Adventures of Beans Baxter.
Okay, well, I'm looking at Damian Slade's IMDb, and
not much.
There is not much.
No, there is not.
He played Joey Spinoza on The Wonder Years, and that looks like it was late in the run of The Wonder Years, 1992.
Yeah, and really, final season would be 92-93.
Yeah, and really after that, he just about fell off the face of the earth.
Yep. And rounding out the cast, you have Joseph Moore as St. Peter trying to help Charles Russell in fixing the mistakes that his past self has made.
By the way, one of the rules, I think this is just one of your major time travel rules, but one of the rules that Charles Russell is sort of fixed to is that nobody can know the truth about Charles Russell's identity unless it affects Chaz Russell's future.
Yes. Okay, so now that we've gotten the gist of what this show's about, let's get into the episodes of Second Chance. Episode 1, The End. So we've mentioned what's happened. Charles Russell was on the Santa Monica Skyway. He died in an accident, and he's not good enough for heaven or hell. And Mike, I think you got something to say about this part.
Are you talking about the Doors?
Yes!
Okay, seriously? That should have been a prop for a game show. Do you go into door one or door two? Where's the good prize? Which door is going to send you to heaven? Which door is going to send you to hell? I mean, it does look like something you might see on a game show of some sort.
Yes, it does.
Yep.
Also, I didn't know when we go to heaven or when we're on the verge of going to heaven, when we're sort of like in purgatory. We have two doors. Which door are you going to go into? I always thought it would be the pearly gates and they'd judge you there. No, apparently there's two doors.
Yep.
And they have flashing lights on the floor.
Oh, man. So, St. Peter sends him back. He meets his younger self and his mother, and they're looking, and they ask what his name is. So when struggling for a name, the older Charles calls himself Charles Time after looking at a Time magazine that's lying around the Russell's house. Gee, it's a good thing Time magazine was there, because it would be weird if his name turned out to be Charles Newsweek.
I'm just glad his name didn't turn out to be Charles Playgirl.
Or well, Charles, it could be worse. What? Charles Hustler.
Oh! So, older Charles inquires Chaz's mother about the apartment that's available for rent. So he gives his mother a $50 bill that has John Travolta's face on it. Oh man, insert your own Scientology E-meter joke here.
Yikes.
Travolta's face is on currency in 2011? Yikes.
So Charles warns Chaz that something is going to happen that he doesn't want to happen to him. And Chaz thinks, this guy's cray-cray. So we then meet Chaz's friends, Booch and Eugene. Booch asks Chaz about his financial troubles that he and his mom are having. and Chaz's mom is behind on the payments, and they need to find a way for Chaz to keep the house. So they decide the night of a big lotto drawing, they're going to go to the mini bar and stage a robbery. Chaz initially doesn't want to rob the store, but he needs the money since the house is going to be repossessed. So Chaz and Booch go to the mini mart, and Jesus Christ, they look stupid. Chaz looks like Clark Kent, and Booch looks like an even more horrible double for Freddie Mercury. So Chaz attempts a robbery when it turns out Charles is behind the counter. Chaz decides not to go through with the robbery and decides to take a ticket for the lotto from Charles, although Eugene badly arrives late wearing a stupid-ass dress holding a gun. Charles asks them to all leave before they do anything stupid. St. Peter then arrives to Charles, and he has this stupid trick with changing the color of his snow cones.
Well, he's changing the color of the snow cones. Is he changing the flavor, too?
Oh, man, that'd be awesome if you had your own snow cone. You could change the flavor to whatever you wanted.
Yeah, but like, also at the same point, I mean, if he can change the color of a snow cone from, say, red to yellow, that yellow better not taste like cherry. The yellow better taste like lemon.
If you know what I mean.
And I think you do.
We do.
Yep. St. Peter says to Charles that he changed the circumstances of Chaz, but not his moral standards, because this is a series and we need this plot line to continue. So Charles must stay to help Chaz and teach him how to resist. Chaz then comes back to the mini bar and finds out that Charles didn't give him the lotto numbers he asked, and that four of the numbers were the winning numbers. Charles didn't remember the other two. And in the process, Chaz wins a couple of thousand dollars, helping out his money situation. Charles then asks Chaz if the apartment hasn't been rented out, if Chaz can put a good word to his mother for him. And that ends episode one. By the way, guys, you're not going to believe another fact I found out about episode one. Did you know that in episode one, they predicted in 1987 that Colonel Muammar Gaddafi would die in the year 2011.
That's freaky.
Yes. What is it with Fox TV shows coming up with all these wacky predictions? Muammar Gaddafi dying in 2011. The Simpsons have made several predictions.
Hi, Greg here at Post. One thing that I forgot to mention in the first episode is in the segment where Charles is trying to come up with a last name and he looks at the cover of Time Magazine. The cover of Time Magazine actually has a picture of Colonel Gaddafi's face on it, continuing the joke in the episode about Gaddafi being sent to hell by St. Peter earlier in the episode. Episode 2, Moving In. Episode 2 opens with St. Peter and William Shakespeare having a conversation about a surprise party for the Lord when Charles comes in. Charles complains that he was dropped back in the past with no ID, and St. Peter says he must work things out for himself. So Charles comes to Chaz and his mom to get the apartment, and they wonder why he has no ID or anything. He came with nothing but a toothbrush. He can't give Chaz's mom any information as to his identity and says he has amnesia. Chaz's mom suggests maybe they should have him rent on a daily basis. Booch suggests that Chaz and Eugene should go to a beach party. Booch provides a fake ID that'll help them get alcohol. It says he's 26 and he lives in Nebraska. Booch then goes up to Charles' apartment because Charles called him on Booch's cell. It was 555 stud.
That's his actual number.
Yep. Charles asks $100 for a fake ID from Booch. Booch shows Charles his fake ID, and then Charles remembers that it's the day of the beach party and that one of his friends drowned and died at the beach party and asks Booch to leave. Charles tries to get St. Peter to come up, but with no avail. Chaz then visits Charles as Charles tells Chaz if his friend Eddie will be at the beach party. Charles talks to Chaz as he tells a thinly veiled story of the night of the beach party from his point of view, where he was distracted by a girl named Barbie and vomited on sight. Charles tries to tell Chaz that it was the worst night of his life, while Chaz is very confused and leaves the room. Charles then eats with Chaz's mom for dinner as Chaz's mom says she's preparing to kick him out of the house because Chaz told her he hates his guts. Charles says he'll be gone by morning. Chaz's mom asks, where do you think you'll go? Charles replies, hell, I don't know. Get it?
Yeah.
St. Peter then arrives at the apartment where he arrives in a tux to prepare for Shakespeare's new play. Charles says he messed up and bought a one-way ticket to hell. St. Peter tells Charles to open the door when Chaz comes in from the beach party when he talks about his experience and remembers the girl named Barbie was coincidentally there and gave him second thoughts about drinking. And then he saw Eddie in the ocean caught in a riptide and saved him since he was the only person at the party who was not drinking. Charles thinks that's it and is preparing to leave when Chaz says that he thinks Charles should get a second chance, to which Charles replies, another one? Chaz then
these are the jokes, ladies and gentlemen.
Yep. Chaz then says he'll just tell his mom that he was only fooling about Charles wanting to leave. Episode 3, Plain Jane. St. Peter is getting a haircut from Delilah when Charles comes in from the middle of painting his bathroom in the apartment. St. Peter asks Charles how he's doing when he mentions the junior prom is coming up, which Charles does not remember, as St. Peter warns him to not repeat the same mistake, which Charles is confused about. We then cut to Charles and Chaz eating dinner with Chaz's mom when Chaz's mom notices that they're both doing the same things at the same time while eating.
Again, bootstrap paradox.
Yep. Oh, and here we go. Call back to a previous entry. Jane the Nerdy Girl, played by Amy O'Neill, who we mentioned in previous installment, Where's Rodney? Yep. Arrives, and it's clear that she has a crush on Chaz, as Charles tells Chaz they need to get out of the living room to watch Nazi robots from Mars. Jane tells Chaz's mom that she thinks Chaz made his date to the prom ages ago, since she doesn't have a date. Chaz's mom figures that Chaz likes her, so she tries to set up a date with her and Chaz for the prom. Chaz's mom then asks about Chaz's plans for the prom when she suggests Jane. Chaz was hoping to ask a fox to the prom, but he says he might as well ask Jane out for the dance. St. Peter then arrives to talk to Charles to take him to a donut shop in the year 2005, as St. Peter says to Charles that he stood up Jane at the prom for a cheerleader and shows her how her life got affected as she's a worker at the donut shop who's chastised by her boss because when she got ditched, she lost all of her self-respect, and it's now up to Charles to correct the mistake.
Ooh.
Charles then is back in the year 1987 playing poker with Chaz, Booch, and Eugene. Booch asks if Chaz has a date and then reluctantly says he's taking Jane to the prom. Booch tries to set up Chaz with the cheerleader while Charles tries to say to Booch that he can't stand up Jane. But Chaz says he's going to go through with it and stand Jane up. But Charles says that he'll be the one to do it instead because you do the same for me. Oh, Jesus.
Oh, boy.
We then go to prom night as Chaz, Booch, and Eugene are getting ready for the prom as Charles is taking the pictures at Chaz's house when Chaz's mom brings Jane in and gasp! Oh my god, guys! She got a makeover!
What?
Yeah, I know. Chaz tells Booch that he's going to change his plans and take Jane out to the prom instead. As Booch says, sure, I'll ask the cheerleader if she'll go with Eugene instead. Spoiler alert. No. It was revealed that Charles gave Jane a new gown and a trip to the beauty salon. So we then go back to 2005 with St. Peter and Charles at the donut shop when it turns out that Jane is now a very successful businesswoman who owns the donut shop. And twist, her old boss is now in her janitor job. St. Peter decides to make Jane see Charles as they reunite and discuss prom night, as Jane called it the greatest night of her life, and gives him a free brownie from the bakery.
Aww.
Now, episode 4, Life Without Father. This is one of the 3 episodes from Second Chance that is not on YouTube, unfortunately. But I'll read the plot of it. Charles relives a pivotal event. The time his father, played by Richard Klein, made a fishing date with him and never showed up. Chaz and his father get into a fight. Chaz says, "I wish you were dead." So St. Peter is brought to show Chaz what his life would be without his father.
Oh, darn. I thought St. Peter might, like, kill his father and, well, that's too gory.
No, yeah. That's in a later episode. And we're getting ahead of ourselves.
That's not freaky at all.
Episode 5, Oedipus Russell. This episode is also not on YouTube. Chaz misinterprets Charles' attempts to keep him from meddling in his mom's social life. Chaz also has a dream that he was a king. He was back at home with Booch, his old best friend, but when he woke up, he saw St. Peter watching over him as if he was protecting him from life.
Wait, this is Oedipus Russell, so Chaz is arranging a date for his mother and himself.
Yeah. That's not weird at all.
No, not weird at all.
You know what's even more weirder? Episode 6, Handy Boy.
Oh, boy.
St. Peter brings in Charles from shaving and tells him that he's messed around in his own past. Chaz's mom is off on a trip when Chaz and Charles arrive to meet Chaz's mom's friend, Wendy. Chaz mentions he's going to surprise his mom when she gets back because he's going to fix the stereo because his mom doesn't know he broke it. When Wendy offers Chaz to fix her stereo, Charles convinces Chaz to help her out, and that causes the problem because Chaz went to install Wendy's stereo, and then they got back to Chaz's house as Wendy makes the moves on Chaz and kisses him. So Chaz's mother's boss is making the moves on Chaz. Oh, this is not going to end well at all, guys.
No. No, it will not. And and again, stop me if you've heard that one before.
Booch and Eugene then walk into the room. Eugene thinks that they're having a staring contest to see who would blink first. Wendy then leaves and tells Chaz he has a wall unit that needs to be installed. Get it?
Uh-huh. Is that something from the Ty Lookwell School of Double Entendres?
Yes. Chaz tells Booch and Eugene about his situation that Wendy is his mom's boss and she wants him for sex, which causes Eugene to faint. Booch then gives Chaz 3 tips to handle an older woman. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
I'm taking copious notes,
Greg. Mike's going to use this later. Do not use this later, Mike.
Yeah, especially it's from Booch. In moments of extreme passion, avoid phrases like yippee, gee whiz, and this is neato. Pretend that you like all that old-fashioned stuff like the Beatles. And finally, don't hang on anything which isn't firmly secured.
Okay, you know what? The third one is a good one. Number one sounds like something a teenager would say, which definitely you wouldn't want to use in front of an older woman. And then number two sounds like something that somebody probably older than Wendy, Chaz's mom's friend, would say. So it's definitely one and two you definitely would not want to do. But number three, that's actually darn good. Don't hang on to anything which isn't firmly secured.
Yep.
That's just good life advice.
Eugene then wakes up after Chaz gives his 3 tips and asks Booch and Chaz what they were talking about. Booch reminds him it's about if Chaz should have sex with his mom's boss when Eugene then faints again.
Eugene seems to faint quite a bit in this show.
Yeah.
Well, he's Eugene. He's a scraggly little boy then.
St. Peter then tells Charles that it's disastrous since Charles was sent back to keep Chaz away from temptation. So Charles is sent back to stop Chaz from going through with having sex with his mom's boss. So Charles and Chaz are having a breakfast of ice cream, potato chips, and candy when Charles talks about the date with Wendy. Chaz figures that he must have quote-unquote it and tells Charles that Wendy and him are getting together again tonight. But Charles asks, does this feel right? Chaz's answer is yes. Charles wants Chaz to dig deep and ask to find the part that tells him what is right and wrong. And then Chaz's mom arrives early from her trip, and Chaz tells her that he can't stop by Wendy's to fix the wall unit. Chaz's mom then says, I would appreciate it if you do whatever she wants. Uh-oh. And then she says, she'll probably try to pay you. Just tell her it's on the house. And if she's not happy the first time, do it over. Man, did she go to the same school of Ty Lookwell favors that need extra attention?
I'm wondering if Chaz's mom knows Herb Abrams, talking about she'll try to pay you. Just make sure you don't pay with a check. It's got to be cash.
Yep.
It's cash and cash only.
St. Peter then calls Charles back from shaving again to tell him Chaz is off to see Wendy right now and warns Charles if he doesn't stop Chaz, he's going to roast in hell. So Chaz is at Wendy's house when the phone rings as Chaz's mom calls Wendy to ask him to pick a dozen eggs from the store, but she knows him and Wendy will want to get started. Get it?
What? Yeah.
Chaz decides that he can't go through with this because it would cause problems for his mom and that it could lead to taking phone calls on Donahue. It's 1987, folks. And tells Wendy that it's over, but not before he plants a fancy kiss on Wendy and says, now it's over. Charles and St. Peter arrive at Wendy's house to celebrate Chaz not going through with it, but St. Peter says he feels sorry for Wendy and tells Charles to do something about it. Wendy then walks into the room, and Charles asks Wendy if they would like to go see a movie together. And they do.
Aww.
Episode 7, To Have Loved and Lost. This is another episode that's not on YouTube. Chaz's first job leads to his first love, an experience Charles wishes Chaz would avoid. Chaz broke up with his girlfriend that he has been in love with since the first grade, and the older version of Charles Russell tries to make her forgive him by giving her flowers. But she refuses, and she tells Chaz she wants to take a break. Now, this is the first appearance of Chaz's on-again, off-again girlfriend, Debbie, played by Terry Ivins, who figures prominently in the retooled version of this show, but we'll get to that a little bit later.
Also not the only Debbie that Terry Ivins plays.
Really? Because what else? Whatever Debbie
she plays play. Debbie, who is the big sister of R.J. Williams' Sam character on the live-action interstitials of Wake, Rattle, and Roll.
What the heck is Wake, Rattle, and Roll?
It's a morning show with R.J. Williams, Avery Schreiber, and a bunch of Hanna-Barbera cartoons.
Okay, you mentioned Avery Schreiber. Now I got to check this out after we're done with this.
And a robot who's voiced by Rob Paulsen.
Oh, yeah, robot with Rob Paulsen. I'm in, baby.
Future installment.
Yeah, that's going to be on the list after this episode if it's not on.
I got you.
Episode 8, Midterm Blues. Charles is back from a trip at Death Valley when he is talking to St. Peter. St. Peter tells Charles that Chaz and Booch got in trouble. The previous night, Chaz and Eugene were studying for a test when Booch let them know his plan for the test is to cheat, looking at Eugene's answers, figuring he's not going to get caught. Charles warns them that they can't cheat and that the teacher, Mr. Jack, will be watching like a hawk. Booch figures since it's a multiple choice test, he wants Eugene to have a plan. If it's an A, Eugene coughs. If it's a B, Eugene clears his throat. If it's a C, Eugene sneezes. If it's a D, Eugene blows his nose.
That Man. Sounds familiar, but I don't know from where.
Man, Booch was really ahead of its time. Maybe that's where Charles Ingram got his plan to cheat on Millionaire.
I know, right?
So the test occurs, and Eugene isn't there at first. Mr. Jack, played by Stuart Pankin, comes into the room, and he's very stern. He doesn't want anyone to peek at the answers. Eugene arrives late awkwardly because he got his head stuck in the locker.
Because of course he did.
Yep.
Because Eugene!
Yeah. Mr. Jack reads the paper as Eugene gives his cues to Booch, but it turns out, what? Eugene has a cold! So there's a series of scenes where Chaz, Booch, and Eugene pass notes to each other to distract from Mr. Jack as Booch's note asks Chaz if he can give the answers. Chaz does, which makes Mr. Jack suspicious, and he discovers the note from Booch as Chaz claims he was helping no one and is ordered to go to the principal's office. But before he's about to go, Mr. Jack orders the person who wrote it to speak up, which Booch doesn't. Chaz's mom asks Chaz who wrote the note, and Chaz can't tell her, so he's grounded for 2 months as punishment. Booch then arrives at the house as Chaz says he's gotten pressure to tell on him, but Booch has news to cheer Chaz up. He found a $5 bill. Well, that's good news. Chaz wants Booch to take the rap for him, but Booch doesn't want to take the fall and confess. St. Peter left a note signed by Charles on Booch's door as Booch arrives to Charles' apartment. Booch says Charles left a weird note, which was on a scroll. Get it? Left a note on a scroll. Like something.
Because in heaven they don't have notepads.
No, they don't.
Charles tells Booch he needs his help to find the guy that Chaz is trying to protect, and says because Booch is Chaz's best friend, he needs to help Chaz find the cheater. Booch asks Charles why he's so concerned about Chaz, and Charles says, I feel like I'm living my life over again through him, to which Booch replies, yeah, why don't you just get a dog?
Because he doesn't know who Charles Time is.
No.
Chaz is back in Mr. Jack's room to ask who Chaz is trying to protect, or he'll be expelled from school when Booch confesses to the crime. Mr. Jack says he feels generous, and because Booch came in and confessed that he cheated, it won't appear on their permanent records, but they'll both get an F for the midterm, and Jack suggests they both study for the final. So we close with Chaz and Booch playing a quiz bowl competition with Charles as the host to close out the show.
Nice.
Yes. Anything to add, Mike?
Nope.
Okay, then. All right, and the final episode of Second Chance, Episode 9, A Hunting We Will Go. Chaz is going out for a trip in the woods with Booch and Eugene when Charles remembers something terrible happened on the trip. St. Peter is called from a softball game, and he appears complete in a ridiculous coach's uniform with a uniform and a jacket. Because they probably take their softball seriously up in heaven.
They take everything else seriously up in heaven.
Yeah, can you imagine Babe Ruth and Lou Gehrig on your beer league softball team up in heaven?
Ty Cobb would be pissed!
Well, they do take their baseball very seriously up there in heaven because their favorite team is the Angels.
Bravo, Mike.
Very well done, Mike.
Charles says that on that trip, Booch brought a gun to the campsite, and Chaz on the trip ended up getting shot. Eugene gets spooked by something out in the woods, and Chaz goes out to investigate the situation when Booch and Eugene hear a grizzly bear in the background, and Eugene ends up accidentally shooting Chaz in the shoulder. So Charles ends up going to the campsite to take the gun away from Booch while he's sleeping. When Charles comes back home, he finds a robber who was in Chaz's house, as the robber immediately runs away when he sees Charles with the gun. St. Peter informs Charles that Chaz still thinks guns are cool and that he screwed up, so the gun is magically transported at the campsite. See? I told you he was responsible for Puchinsky going into the dog.
I never said he wasn't.
Mike didn't.
Well, you're going to have to take it up with him.
No comment, Mike.
St. Peter is responsible for putting... No! As I said, Puchinsky and the dog, they had that natural connection. Their eyes were meeting, and they were looking at each other in the eyes. That was when the soul was transferred from Puchinsky to the dog.
No, you're wrong, Mike. No. No, one day. That's still not enough. So we're back at the situation.
Prove me wrong. Oh wait, you did, because the Twitter poll said that a pet cannot be a beloved part of the family after one day. Thank you, Twitter, for betraying me again.
Well, in fairness, Mike, it is Twitter. They are wrong about a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
So we're back at the situation with the bear, and instead of Chaz getting shot, Charles gets shot in the shoulder instead, and Chaz learns a lesson that guns aren't cool. So Chaz, Booch, and Eugene make a makeshift stretcher for Charles to get back to the car, which doesn't work. Charles decides, never mind, I'll walk.
And guess what? That's the last time we saw Charles.
Yeah, I guess. Apparently, after Chaz learned his lesson that guns aren't cool, St. Peter said, you know what? That's enough, Charles. You're done. You're getting to heaven, baby.
Or Fox executives came in and said, this is such a horrible TV show. We've got to revamp it. We're going to redo the whole show. We're going to get rid of the St. Peter element and Charles time, and we're going to just make this about the teenagers, about Booch and Eugene and Chaz.
Yeah, because thanks to Fox audience research, they decided, you know what? You know what? This show, it's getting horrible reviews. It's getting horrible ratings. We got to just retool this show. And so they retooled it into... Boys Will Be Boys. Oh, the revamped version. Yeah, that's a bop.
They pretty much added a few bars to the Second Chance theme and rocked it up as Bob Howard and Rick, or Bob Worth and Rick Howard, sorry, are off to do.
Everything's now changed. So apparently, Charles Russell, he's now into heaven, I guess, and St. Peter's gone. So now it's just Chaz, his friends, and his mom. So let's get into Boys Will Be Boys. Episode 10, the first episode of Boys Will Be Boys, Hot Wheels. Chaz is working in the garage when Debbie arrives and asks to borrow his weed whacker. And then Debbie asks Chaz on a date, which leads to that weird-ass dance that Matthew Perry does at the start of the Boys Will Be Boys credits.
Yep.
Like I can't replicate that.
I don't see anybody who could replicate that.
No. I mean, that's man, that's like, geez, I got no words to say about that. Anyway, Chaz's mom has come up with a good name for her fragrance business called Good Scents. What?
Scents? Really? S-C-E-N-T-S? Fragrance?
Yeah. I guess. Chaz's mom says that Chaz can't take the car because she's taking his 94-year-old grandmother to the hospital for a facelift.
Okay.
Yeah, I guess that's a common thing in California. Your 94-year-old grandmothers, they really want their facelifts. So Chaz asks to borrow Booch's car to no luck, but Booch changes his mind when Chaz shows him a peek of Debbie using the weed whacker through his binoculars. Booch says he knows a guy who can get Chaz a car. Booch then gets Chaz a fancy 1987 Corvette, and Chaz asks how Booch got a car for $500, and it turns out that Booch stole the car. Uh-oh. And it turns out it has one of those fancy-ass 1987-88 era car phones.
Oh, no.
Yeah, those were the rage back in the day. You got a car with a car phone, you're set.
Yeah, the moral of the story is, if it's too good to be true, it probably is.
Yep.
500 for a Corvette? Yeah, there's something wrong with it.
Something's wrong with it.
That car's hot. Yep.
Yep.
It's either stolen or not a Corvette or aftermarket or something, but something's wrong with it.
Yep. Chaz says there's no way he could use the car since it's stolen, and he wants to take the car back when Debbie walks in and sees the car and is impressed by the Corvette, causing Chaz to act casual. Chaz decides he'll keep the car for one night and then give it back, but until then, he and Booch decide to take the car for a test drive, and Chaz says, "This is going to be the best night of my life." Well, Chaz and Booch get taken to the jail for stealing the Corvette. And it is not good times in the jail, as Chaz and Booch run into a paranoid businessman in the jail who killed 7 people and said he didn't do it and blames it on a small puppet named Buffy who has an axe.
Whoops.
Eugene then comes to the jail and informs them that Chaz's mom is providing them with a bail, as Chaz frets that he's most likely dead. Chaz's mom then have a heart-to-heart talk back at the house, settling the situation.
So this is just standard sitcom fare.
Yeah.
Trouble happens, yeah. Parent takes him home, parent says, "Do you know what you did wrong?" "Yeah, mom, I won't do it again." And everybody lives happily ever after, at least until the next episode.
Yep. And the next episode, actually the next two series of episodes are two-parters. So episodes 11 and 12, Viva Las Vegas. Chaz tells his mother that he's going on a retreat and then joins Booch and Eugene on the trip to Las Vegas. Chaz's excuse is that he tells his mother that he wants to devote his life and become a priest. And his mom asks what makes him think he has a calling. Now get this, guys. Chaz claims that late at night, right after Crosswits, something drew Chaz to his bedroom window, a white light shining over the Shell station. So his excuse is he's going to a seminary.
Now wait, I need clarification. Was he watching the 70s version of Crosswits, or was he watching future installment, the David Sparks version of Crosswits? Probably the latter, but you never know.
I don't know. It's Los Angeles. You know, they air some weird stuff in reruns there.
They do.
The boys arrive in Vegas at a dump of a motel, which looks like they just reskinned the garage from the previous episode. The person who runs the motel says, quote unquote, "This is the Sonny Bono suite."
Because, yeah. Yeah.
After a phone call to Chaz's mom, his mom finds the brochure for the Lucky 7 Motel in Chaz's wash. The Lucky 7 Motel I think I'm getting the calling myself. So Chaz, Booch, and Eugene hit the casinos, where Chaz rides a hot streak in craps, where Booch decides that they should risk all their money on one roll of the dice, which is where part one ends. But don't fret, guys. He wins on the roll of the dice. Yeah, what a cheap tease. The people at the casino check Chaz's fake ID, and for some reason, it checks out because it's 1988, guys.
So it was the David Sparks version of Crosswits.
That's your takeaway?
Chaz
Among
ends up,
others, yeah.
Chaz ends up with a girl named Bambi who plays the Statue of Liberty at a show at the casino, and he takes her back to the motel for some sprites from the soda machine and then make out. Booch is having hard luck when he tries playing craps, but the proprietor of the casino says they'll lend Booch money on the condition he'll pay back, and Booch accepts. Eugene
this
then
never works out.
No, it does not. This is not going to end well at all for Booch. Eugene then runs into Booch where he was at a circus show and is in full ridiculous clown makeup. Meanwhile, back at the motel, Chaz is ready to have sex with Bambi, but Bambi asks Chaz if she can do a favor and asks the manager of the motel to borrow a jar of mayonnaise. As Chaz leaves the room, Bambi then steals a manila envelope that has the $60,000 that Chaz won in the craps game. Booch then finds Chaz back at the motel room when Booch discovers that Bambi, along with the cash, is gone. Booch can't believe that Chaz fell for the mayonnaise trick. Booch tells Chaz he's in a spot since he owns the casino money for the craps game. They decide they're going to get back at Bambi by going to the show she's at. So Booch is dressed ridiculously like George Washington as he confronts Bambi by saying that Chaz is quote-unquote part of the Russell fortune and that he's ridiculously rich, around $400 million. So Bambi goes back to the motel room with the envelope of money, claiming she was captured by the PLO. Again, 1988 people.
Yeah.
Chaz tells Bambi, there's no Russell fortune, I'm just an ordinary guy. Bambi promptly leaves when Chaz's mom finally arrives to confront Chaz and Booch, and she lets the casino proprietor know that they're both 17. When Chaz and Booch let her know that she gave away $40,000, they rush out of the room because they can still catch him. And that's where the episode ends.
Oh, boy. This is part. This is that's where part two ends.
That's the end of. That's the end of the. That's the end of the series of episodes.
Oh, so there's another series right after. Oh wait,
there's a, yeah, there's another two-parter right after this. It's a and very. The, it's there's... a very special episode, guys.
Oh boy.
Yeah, this is gonna be something, huh? Episodes 13 and 14 changes part 1 and 2. Chaz is on a date with Debbie when his mom catches them smooching. Chaz says that he needs some privacy, so he figures the room over the garage is now tenantless, so he'll live there in order to gain some independence. Booch is having issues with his alcoholic father, so he offers to be Chaz's roommate. Booch thanks Chaz's mom for letting him move in with Chaz, talk about his problems with his father, and feels like everything is his fault, and feels like he needs to help his father. Chaz's mom says until he gets his life together, he's better off at their house. Chaz and Debbie then have a date at the apartment while Booch is supposed to patch things up with his father when Booch busts in and skips it because he wouldn't talk to him. Chaz is pissed at Booch, and Booch is about to be kicked out of the apartment by Chaz when Chaz's mother comes in to let Booch know that his father was hit by a car and was killed, ending part one. Gee, guys, where the hell was St. Peter to stop this?
I have no idea. I'm still wondering where Kill Martin is.
I don't know. Part 2 opens with Chaz, Booch, Chaz's mom, and Eugene coming back from Booch's dad's funeral. Booch is depressed because they were four of the only five people to show up at the funeral. The fifth was his dad's bartender. Chaz's mom lets Booch know that it's painful for him, but it will get better. But Booch is angry because he knew his dad had a drinking problem and could have fixed it. Chaz tries to cheer Booch back up at the apartment and sees that Booch gets a letter from his father's insurance company where Booch was allowed to check for 10 grand, but Booch feels like he doesn't deserve it since it doesn't make up for his dad being gone. Booch then shows Chaz and Eugene a motorcycle that he got with the check he got from the insurance company, and he's basically in IDGAF mode.
What does IDGAF mode mean, Greg?
Oh, you know what it means, Mike.
Oh, I don't give a flip.
Yeah. That would be the G-rated version.
Yep.
Yeah, we gotta keep that clean rating on iTunes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we lost it long ago, buddy, with the Tyler Cross School in episode 6. Eugene warns Chaz that Booch is trying to hang a banner in an abandoned building to play a prank on a rival high school, but the problem is he's on a fire escape hanging the banner while there's strong wind. Chaz goes to the building to try and stop Booch, but the fire escape breaks and both are hanging from the fire escape as both try to climb back onto the window as Chaz saves Booch's life. Booch gets back home and figures he started taking risks because he felt he didn't deserve to live, and he never got a chance to tell his dad before he died how he felt about him and how he's never going to make the same mistake again, and tells Chaz and Chaz's mom how happy he is to have him in his life. Aww.
Aww.
But what about the motorcycle?
Oh, he still has the motorcycle, baby.
Okay, I thought there might be some closure with the motorcycle. Okay.
There's never a closure on this show, but that's the part of the charm of it.
Yep. Episode 15, The Girl Next Door. Chaz is in trouble when Debbie catches him kissing another girl. What happens is Booch brought a softball team over to the apartment, and Debbie caught Chaz making out with one of the players on the softball team. Oh, noes. So Chaz goes out on a date with the softball player he made out with on the Santa Monica Pier, and all Chaz can think about on the date is Debbie, and then the girl leaves him, and worst of all, Chaz falls off a rock into the ocean and breaks his leg. But don't worry, Chaz goes out catching Debbie in her room with another guy, and Chaz scares him away, and at the end of the episode, Chaz and Debbie get back together as Chaz realizes he messed up.
This sounds like a potential pilot for Cheaters about 12 years early.
Right.
Episode 16, South of the Border. Chaz is trying to get Debbie a gift for their 6-month anniversary when Chaz's mom suggests to go to Tijuana since the peso keeps getting devalued, so he goes there with Booch and Eugene. The gang enters a Mexican bar after their car gets busted as they're trying to get a water pump for their car. They try to sweet talk the proprietor of the bar to get the water pump on one condition. She wants to have sex with Chaz.
What is it? Wait. What is it with everybody? All the females on this show want to have sex with Chaz. He's 17. That's illegal, even in 1988.
Mike, you're bringing up logic on this show.
I get it's a Fox TV show from 1987 and 88, and logic is totally thrown out the window. But still, come on.
Chaz and the woman then go to her room, and Chaz can't go through with it because he can't cheat on Debbie. But here's the twist. The woman's husband enters the room and is angry at her, but the woman only did it to make her husband jealous. Wow. So the proprietor of the bar lets Chaz get his gift and gives him the water pump he needs for the car free of charge. As Chaz gives Debbie her anniversary gift, Eugene enters into the apartment riding a donkey.
I think they stole that from Shakespeare. I may be wrong on that, though.
Episode 17, The Gang. So we have another semi-regular enter in the show, Adam Sadowski from previous entry, It's Your Move, as a semi-regular named Alex. Now, the character of Alex was in one of the 3 episodes of Second Chance that's sadly not on YouTube. And funny enough, Charles Russell found out that Alex was also sent by St. Peter on a mission from God.
How did that turn out?
I don't know, because apparently it's all forgotten about, because obviously the show got retold. I guess maybe he finished doing whatever his work was for St. Peter, and so he figured, well, you might as well work at a fast food restaurant now, Alex. So basically, the episode opens up. Chaz gets a new job as the assistant manager of a fast food restaurant called Zorro Burger that Eugene and Alex work for. And when we see Alex for the first time, he's in the middle of eating everything because he felt it was important to familiarize himself with the product line.
That's my excuse.
Yep. Eugene is also not very good at interacting with customers because a customer asks if their French fries are real, but Eugene says that they're not from France.
Wow.
Booch becomes enamored with an attractive redhead named Kyla at the fast food place who's involved with a gang, and shocker, the other members of the gang are not happy about it. Booch and Kyla are going out on a date to the Santa Monica Pier, where Kyla gets shot off-screen by the gang on the way to the pier. Booch then goes to the gang to confront the gang when Chaz arrives with his workers from Zorro Burger, and they're just armed with stuff from around the restaurant. Eugene is armed with a colander, while Alex is armed with a spatula, and surprise, guys, he's eating French fries when he arrives.
What's up with this guy in French fries, man?
The Zorro Burger fries must be really good.
Yeah, I mean, you know, guys, I think probably you think the Zorro Burger has a great takeout business that's provided by the Philly Mafia.
They got a great takeout business.
Well, that would be by the Santa Monica Mafia, wouldn't it?
Hey, the Philly Mafia's got connections, man.
Yeah, well, East Coast, West Coast.
Yep. The gang member who was Kyla's ex-boyfriend's little brother comes into the room to tell him that he heard on the news that Kyla died of her injuries at the hospital, and he decides that enough is enough and decides that being in a gang just isn't cool. And he walks away along with the other members of the gang, leaving the poor bastard who shot and killed her all alone. And he's later in a newspaper article read by Chaz's mother revealed to have been taken into custody. The staff at Zorro Burger names a burger in Kyla's honor called the Kyla Burger.
I wonder what's in the Kyla Burger.
I don't know, man. I don't Kyla? Know. Oh!
Go to your room and think about what you've done!
You knew I was going to say that.
But you know, guys, another situation that St. Peter could have stopped. And he didn't.
Darn, yeah. The retooling.
Oh, and by the way, guys, I got to point out while watching this episode, there's a crazy ad at the end for Krispy Critters cereal from Post, where the mascot for Krispy Critters is talking with a bunch of parents about how Krispy Critters is low in sugar and is good for kids.
The lie detector determined that was a lie.
I don't understand why the mascot talks like Jimmy Durant, Randy.
Because it's the 80s and all the old-timey people sound like Jimmy Durante.
But also, the Krispy Critters mascot looks a little bit like somebody we've talked about for a number of months, Freddy Freaker.
Oh, yes, Freddy Freaker. You'll find out about him more in an episode later this year. I think that's even more... I think along with Second Chance / Boys Will Be Boys, we've been awaiting that along with this show from the beginning.
So, okay. A lot of stuff to look forward to.
Episode 18, The Secret of Their Success. Because, get it, guys, it's a timely reference because the Michael J. Fox movie, The Secret of My Success, came out a couple months earlier.
Oh, I get it.
Yeah! I remember that.
Yep, that'll be another thing we'll cover on It Was a Thing at the Movies on Patreon. Geez, how many movies is that now for the spinoff podcast? Like a baker's dozen?
About. More or less.
Booch bakes some cookies when Chaz and his mother are impressed with how good his cookies are. So Booch surprises a date on her birthday at Zora Burger with his cookies, and she loves him. And also, not surprisingly, Alex walks over and eats one of the cookies, and everyone at the restaurant is trying them out. Eugene calls it the best cookies ever had, when funny enough, guess who we cut to?
Alex?
No. Wally Famous Amos, who's reading a paper and says, "Don't you mean the second best cookie you've ever tasted?" And then Eugene walks up to Famous Amos and says, "You look familiar." And Famous Amos points to the picture of the box of cookies with his face on it. And Eugene is like, "No, that's not it." Chaz points out that it's Famous Amos and asks him to try the cookies. And even he's like, "Wow, these are some good cookies." Amos wishes Booch luck on his cookies and walks off, making Booch have the idea to go to business with his cookies. Booch decides he's going to go to business with his cookies and quit school.
And we all learned that that's not cool because 1988.
Chaz thinks it's a stupid idea since Booch will never get anywhere without a high school diploma, while Eugene in response says it's not only that Booch will end up with only one leg because his uncle dropped out of high school and was run over by a wheat thresher and then married a pretty lady who also had one leg. Okay.
What is her name, Eileen?
Boo!
I'm going to my room.
Chaz's mom tries to convince Booch not to drop out of school, but he wants to do something for them. But they'd be prouder if Booch stayed in school, but Booch is like, nope. Booch is looking for startup money for the cookie business, which he only has $7.50. He tries to get Chaz to loan some money, and he's like, nope. Booch then goes back to Chaz that he hasn't been getting cookies to sell to supermarkets since they don't want designer cookies. And he points out, "Did you know Jessica Hahn has a cookie?" And you wouldn't believe the picture on the bag. Guys, 1988.
Yeah.
Yeah, bet you those Jessica Hahn cookies aren't as good as Herb Abrams' UWF cookies.
Oh. Well, they don't have the hint of baby oil and cocaine, I'm afraid.
Oh, jeez.
Booch is out of money when Chaz thinks his boss, Mr. Warren, will buy them. Mr. Warren tries the cookie and he likes it and thinks he can sell them to the other Zora Burger owners. But when Booch says he'll sell them for $8 a bag, he tells him to get lost. One other note about Mr. Warren. I forgot to mention the actor who plays Mr. Warren in episode 18, Earl Bone, is best known for playing Dr. Peter Silberman in Terminators 1, 2, and 3. And he's notable for being the only actor other than Arnold Schwarzenegger to appear in the first three Terminator movies. And he also will turn up in future installments, The Law and Harry McGraw, along with a guest spot in future installment, Just Our Luck. All right, back with the episode. So Booch is depressed and decides since he's a failure, he's just going to try and leave town and go on a flight to leave to Toledo, Ohio. But since it's 1988 and security on airports will let anyone in, Chaz goes into the airport and convinces Booch that failing doesn't make him a loser, but giving up does. Booch decides that he'll go back to school because he figures that then he can run a business the right way.
Yep. Hey, it's 1988. School is awesome.
Oh, but he might have to rethink that after episode 19, The Front. We open with the return of Stuart Pankin as Mr. Jack, and he's given a slideshow at the school, boring the crap out of everyone except Eugene, who claps and says, "God bless America."
Because of course Eugene would do that.
Chaz offers to help Mr. Jack return the AV cart back to the library when an attractive girl walks into the room, drawing Booch's attention. And as he talks to her, Shocker, the girl turns out to be Mr. Jack's daughter. And Mr. Jack doesn't want his daughter hanging out with somebody like Booch. And Booch, quote-unquote, promises to never go near her again. We then cut to Booch and Mr. Jack's daughter at the apartment, where they talk about how dumb it is that they have to hide their relationship in private. So they decide to go on a date and have a cover for Mr. Jack's daughter to have someone drive her to the date. So they decide to use Chaz as the middleman in the front. So then we see Chaz at Mr. Jack's house to pick up his daughter. When Mr. Jack shows Chaz the pictures on his wall of former vice presidents, because in Mr. Jack's mind, they are the forgotten heroes. So when Chaz picks up Mr. Jack's daughter, oh my God, he fingerprints Chaz to sign him out of the house because he's nuts. Mr. Jack's daughter is in the bathroom of the apartment changing when Debbie walks into the room and sees Mr. Jack's daughter and thinks Chaz is fooling around with her when Booch walks in after she leaves, sarcastically saying, "Gee, that's terrible." And he goes on the date with Mr. Jack's daughter, who's dressed up as stereotypically 80s on a date as you can get.
Shoulder pads?
Yeah, pretty much. So Booch and Mr. Jack's daughter, Monica, go on the date, and Chaz takes a nap. But oh my God, Booch arrives back with Mr. Jack's daughter at 4 a.m., when he was supposed to take Monica back to the house 5 hours ago. And they arrive back at Mr. DeJack's house, and he's pissed at Chaz because he liked him. He says, "I actually showed you my picture of Gerald Ford," and he orders Chaz to leave.
Ooh. Now this date, you said it was stereotypically 80s. Are we talking frizzy hair, shoulder pads, the whole nine?
Yeah, pretty much. So we go back to school the next day as Mr. Jack looks for a volunteer to collect the homework. Chaz raises his arm, but Mr. Jack instead decides to go with Alex to collect the papers because it would look great on his permanent record.
Always about permanent records on this show.
Yeah. Booch is reading a note from Mr. Jack's daughter in the class, which says that her father is grounding her for 6 months, and Booch confronts Mr. Jack, saying that Chaz was just covering for her and that he was the one who kept her out all night. So Mr. Jack dismisses the class, but Booch confesses he's serious about his daughter, that he makes Mr. Jack read her note, and Booch promises to treat her right. Mr. Jack offers to take Booch's prints and we'll get back to him. Also, Debbie forgives Chaz for the incident with Monica earlier, since it turned out he was covering for Booch, and gives him a hug, while Mr. Jack screams, "No premarital hugging."
Greg, you failed to mention one thing, and I don't know if you caught this.
Okay.
Did you see who played Monica, Mr. Jack's daughter, in this episode?
No.
It was someone who would go to somewhat of a level of stardom not much later after this. Erica Eleniak, who would end up on Baywatch.
Oh!
Oh!
Yeah.
Well, that's something.
Talk about somebody who turned their career around after this show.
And speaking of Baywatch, guys, we'll be talking about Baywatch and future installment, the episode of Baywatch where Hulk Hogan and Randy Savage guest starred.
Bah!
Oh, that's going to be great. Episode 20, Two Men and a Baby. Guys, another timely reference to a movie that's recently come out. Booch's crazy former girlfriend Lana returns to town with a baby she claims is his. After encountering Booch at Zorro Burger, she leaves her baby Anthony at the doorstep of Chaz and Booch's apartment. So Booch is left in charge of the baby, and after spending time with him, he grows attached to the baby, and he wants to take care of it. So he asks Chaz if he can work over at Zorro Burger. So he's doing tasks at Zorro Burger while the baby is in the back of the restaurant. I don't think the boss is going to like that there's a baby in the back of a restaurant.
Who knows? It's 1988. That might just be a hook.
Maybe the boss is a baby, sort of like Alec Baldwin in that movie.
Lana later arrives back at the apartment, and Butch asks why she waited and then dumped the baby on the doorstep. It's because she wanted it to be a surprise. Butch asks Lana that because he now has a job, they should consider getting married. But then Chaz comes into the room and turns on the news, which reports that a toddler was taken from a Zora burger. And it's discovered that Lana stole the baby in order to get together with Butch. Because, as I said, she's crazy.
Ah!
Butch calls the cops on her, and the baby is reunited with its real mother, who thanks Butch for what he did taking care of the baby.
Aww. Pooch is a little softy.
And the final episode, episode 21, The Triangle. This is the only episode from Boys Will Be Boys that is not on YouTube, but I'll just read the description from TV.com, and this is basically it. Pooch goes on a date with Chaz and Debbie, but he feels like a third wheel. Okay, that's it. That's it for Boys Will Be Boys, guys. So, on the whole, of the whole 21 episodes, what are our thoughts about this series?
It went from sitcom with a hook to just a plain old sitcom really quickly.
Yeah, I know. I mean, at least with... And I watched all the available episodes that were on YouTube. And I'll say this. At least with Second Chance, like, there's a gimmick to the show. It may not be the best gimmick for a show that's been used on countless other sitcoms before or since, but at least it had some kind of a hook. With Boys Will Be Boys, it's just like your average run-of-the-mill late 80s sitcom.
It's like Boys Will Be Boys was basically Silver Spoons sexed up a bit.
Yeah, I mean that's what I gather.
And it would make sense because guess who was involved with the show? David Duclos and Gary Mintier and Jim Gogan.
Mike, do you have any thoughts?
No, Chico stole my thought. You had a hook, and once that hook didn't really catch on, you reverted to a pretty stale sitcom format that everybody was doing at that time.
Yeah, and it didn't really help Fox any either, because after those 12 episodes, got the hook.
Yeah,
and you know what replaced it, Mike?
Oh, what did replace?
Family Double Dare.
I was gonna say I wouldn't be surprised if it was Family Double Dare. Yeah.
Are you kidding me? Family Double Dare replaced Boys Will Be Boys?
Well, yeah, Family Double Dare would have aired mid-88, and last episode was May 7th of 88. And, Fox wasn't... How many nights were they airing back then? Maybe three at most?
Well, it was two episodes, because remember, back then, and especially in the advertisements for Second Chance, it was advertised as Fox Weekend Television. So they were only airing Saturdays and Sundays. And, of course, late nights, they would be airing Joan Rivers at 11:30.
Right.
Or 11.
Okay, yeah. I know they started at least with two nights to begin, but I thought maybe it was fall of 88 they added a third night or a fourth night.
Yeah.
Okay.
And aside from that, Fox Television, because they were the offshoot of the Metro Media, still had like a catalog of shows that were being distributed to Fox and or syndication in general. Those would be Your Small Wonder, future installment, the syndication runs of Finders Keepers and Double Dare.
Well, this sitcom came and went. The one good thing about this show, guys, was clearly Matthew Perry.
Well, surely wasn't his friends, I'll say that much.
I see what you did there, Mike.
I really didn't do anything. I think Eugene was a dweeb, and Butch he came across as an arrogant stereotype.
Yep.
But when you watch Second Chance and Boys Will Be Boys, you got the sense when watching it, if Matthew Perry could just be cast in the right series, he was going to be a major star. And sure, it took maybe a couple of other sitcoms and a guest starring turn in a very special episode of Growing Pains, but damn it, he got the right show after he got out of a show where he played a baggage handler in an LAX airport in 2194.
And if we can find the footage of that, that will be an installment.
Yes, because, man, I mean, God, Ryan Stiles, jeez.
Yeah, because if that made it to series, Matthew Perry would have never been on Friends, because that was fall of 94.
Yep. And if that made it to series, Ryan Stiles would have never been on Drew Carey.
And which means he probably, well, he may have been on Whose Line, but yeah, I mean, what would have happened if LAX 2194 actually became a series? Does Matthew Perry go on to Friends? No. Does Ryan Stiles go on to Drew Carey? Probably not, but you never know.
I mean, a lot of what ifs.
A lot of what ifs, indeed.
But yeah, that's not a submission as of right now, because I think all that is out there is maybe the first 2 minutes of an episode or 2 minutes of footage, not the entire pilot.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, guys, Second Chance 1987, and Boys Will Be Boys. We had St. Peter. We had Charles Russell. We had Chaz. We had Booch and Eugene. And we had Wacky Hijinks. But guys, in 1987 and 1988, they were just a thing on TV.
They were a thing on TV twice.
Yeah. And it failed twice.
Yep.
All right, guys. It's time to play a game of eBay Price is Right. So, Chico, you have an item, I assume.
I do have an item. The item up for bid is a slide.
Okay, because this was the item I was going to ask about. Okay.
Okay. Wait.
So I will not participate in this. I will let Mike just guess the price.
Okay, Mike. You're bidding on a Second Chance cast slide with your back-to-back Matthew Perry and Keel Martin.
Are we playing this clock game style? Or
yeah. You know what? Greg, give me 30 seconds.
Oh, hold on. I got to get a stopwatch. I got to get my iPhone.
We are evolving the podcast right now.
Yeah, we're going to be playing a pricing game now. Okay. You tell me when to start, and I'll start the clock.
We're playing clock game rules. So Mike has to give me a bid,
you'll say higher, lower,
right?
And
dollars and cents, please, Mike.
Yeah, dollars and cents.
Right, and I've got 30 seconds to win this slide.
Yeah,
yes,
and
you do.
And Chico, you tell me when to start the clock.
Okay.
With Mike, my first bid.
That's what you said.
Oh, yeah. I forgot how the clock game works. Okay.
Okay. 1999.
Lower.
$14.99.
Higher.
$15.99.
Lower.
$15.50.
Lower.
$15 even.
He's got it.
Okay.
I won the slide.
You won the slide. You can cover the $5 for shipping and handling. It's all yours.
I think I'll pass. Thank you.
Well, guys, you can find us at a number of places. You can find us on Instagram. You can find us on Tumblr. You can find us at Facebook. You can find us at the Bird Site. All at It Was a Thing on TV. And you can also visit our website at itwasathingontv.com, where we have all of our past episodes of the show up. And also, just remember, each and every Wednesday on Place to Be Nation Pop Feed, we got three of our past episodes going up. And guys, I got good news. They're almost up to date. They just put up Mr. Ed, Look Well, and Puchinsky. So I think maybe in about another week or two, we should all be caught up.
Nice.
Yay.
Yeah. Yay.
Well, yeah. Well, this week would be pretty – well, this week we went about as much of a deep dive as you could with these two shows, with Second Chance of Boys with Boys Will Be Boys Right Now and our earlier episode on the Duck Factory. Next week we're pretty much mailing it in, but it's a good mail-in.
Yep. Oh, the second episode, guys, it's either going to be the best episode or it's going to be the worst episode.
Yes, it will.
Yes, I think so, Greg.
One of these things are going to be true. Oh, we'll call it an experimental episode.
Oh, it's very experimental, yes.
Well, guys, until next time, I've been Greg. That was Mike. That was Chico. We'll see you next time here on It Was a Thing on TV.
Wow! And we will thank you for being with us and hope that you're with us next time. So then, I'm Jim Beck saying it's never too late to take a second chance. Bye-bye, everybody.
Mike, again, stop it.
Well, I gotta say, that episode really lived up to the hype. Man, we've been talking about doing that episode since we started the show last fall, and I gotta say, Second Chance 1987/Boys Will Be Boys delivered, and I don't know what's gonna top that. You know what probably tops that? All the stuff that's been going on Place to Be Nation Pop in the last week. Scott Criscoll and Rob Piontek continued their series in the James Bond Legacy in Chapter 3 of the James Bond franchise. They looked at the 7 films done by the late, great Sir Roger Moore. They went through his 12-year 7-film odyssey with bank buyouts, golden bullets, and space shells. Man, oh, I have a lot of those James Bond films on DVD, I gotta say. Spy Who Loved Me, Live and Let Die, probably my favorites of the Roger Moore Bond canon. So I am very much looking forward to hearing that episode from Scott and Rob. In the latest episode of The Year in Pop, Andy Afferton and Scott Criscoll were joined by J.R. Arsenio D'Amato and George Rubino to discuss all the goings-on in news, sports, TV, music, and movies in 1982. The guys talked in depth about the debut of Late Night with David Letterman, the passing of John Belushi, the Sud series, The Catch, The A-Team, Michael Jackson's Thriller album, Rocky III, and E.T. the Extraterrestrial. A tremendous show. Those Year in Pop episodes on Place to Be Nation are always great. Guys, when you get to 1983, just do me a favor. Please mention Mr. Smith. Just please mention Mr. Smith when you get to next year. Andy and Scott, if you're listening, please. Or Match Game Hollywood Squares Hour. Just throw that out there. Just seeing it. Or Manimal on Auto. Manimal. Not Auto Man, just Manimal. Manimal, Mr. Smith, Match Game Hollywood Squares. If you guys can mention them in 1983, that'd be fantastic. Especially Manimal. And what's maybe the most exciting episode of the week for me personally, being a baseball guy, Diamond Conversations welcomed this week 3-time MLB All-Star, World Series champion, and 4-time NL batting champion, Pittsburgh Pirate legend, the Mad Dog, Bill Madlock. The Mad Dog discussed life during the pandemic, the preparation baseball players may have to expect with a shortened 2020 season, and some of the all-time great Hall of Fame pitchers he had success against during his legendary career. A very tremendous show that Diamond Conversations is, and I highly suggest you check that one out. Also, be sure to check out the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed. It includes a dive into topics running the gamut from today's WWE through yesteryear. The feed includes, as always, Place to Be podcast, Main Event, Jenny and the Gems, Body Pressure Luck, PTB NXT, NWA Saturday Special, and so much more. Subscribe today. While you're at it, subscribe to Jennifer Smith's The Jenny Position feed. It's the new home of geek and sassy talk and pop, freak out, drive in, telling stories, and more. Also, check out the North-South Connection brought to you by JT Rosero and Chad Campbell. It's the new home for Wrestling Warzone, No Holds Barred, the Extreme Three-Way Dance, Jeff Learns Wrestling, and more. And a new episode of Jeff Learns Wrestling just dropped on the North-South Connection podcast feed. And as always, it's always a fun show hearing the goings-on in the life of Jeff. It's always a fun time whenever that show drops, let me tell you. Also, on the social media pages, the Greatest Junk Food Tournament will be starting soon. Keep tabs on the tournament Facebook page for details. Also, we have officially kicked off the 2020 Stretch Project, determining the greatest WCW match ever. You have all year to do research, promote matches, build your list. Conversation rules can be found at www.facebook.com/GWCW matches or on the Pro Wrestling Only message board. Be sure not to forget to check out PlaceToBeNation.com each and every day. We have new voices and fresh takes, big articles and topics in the world of wrending, sports and pop culture, including trends, SmackDown on Fox Report, This Week in the WWE by John Crow, Paulie's Perspective, Jason's DVD Deep Dive, Ben's Unpopular Opinion, and don't forget about veteran columns like Glenn Butler's Wednesday Walk Around the Web. And if you're doing online shopping over at Amazon.com, be sure to click on the Amazon banner on the right side of the PTBN homepage or use www.placetobenation.com/Amazon. It takes you right to Amazon and helps out PTBN at no cost to you. Okay, let's dive into our third and final topic of the day. Jim Henson, he was a legendary man in the world of puppetry and television. But everyone has to get their start somewhere. And back in the late 50s, Jim Henson was doing these local commercials for a regional brand of coffee. And they served as a curious beginnings in the career of Mr. Henson. We're taking a look at the Wilkins coffee commercials. Enjoy.
Episode 59, Submission 1044, Wilkins Coffee Ads.
I see you don't drink Wilkins Instant Coffee.
What about my future?
I hate to tell you, but you don't have a future.
Wilkins Coffee. You've probably never heard of it. But,
no.
But it was the genesis of an empire that exists to this very day. That man's name, that visionary who brought puppets and coffee together, the man by the name of Jim Henson. Anybody? Jim Henson? Anybody?
Heard of him.
Have you heard of him? Craig, you heard of Jim Henson?
You mean the Jim Henson of future installment A Muppet Family Christmas?
The very same. So, yeah, Jim Henson, coffee from Washington, D.C. How does this happen? Mike, how did this happen?
So where did this all begin? Jim Henson, back in 1955, through actually almost the end of 1961, so a good 6.5 years, there was a 5-minute TV show that aired twice daily on the NBC affiliate in Washington, D.C., WRC-TV. Yeah, WRC-TV. And it's called Sam and Friends. And actually, that's a future installment, since that's pretty much the origin story of the Muppets. And actually, if you look at pictures of the Sam and Friends characters, you can see some characters that look vaguely like Muppets. I mean, one character clearly looks like Kermit the Frog. One sort of looks like a very deformed and very rudimentary Ernie. And then there's some other monsters who look sort of familiar, but again, might have been rudimentary compared to what they would have ended up being in the 70s. So Jim Henson had this existing relationship with Washington Media doing Sam and Friends. So what happened is in 1957, Jim Henson was approached by the Wilkins Coffee Company to produce some commercials. Now, there were a couple stipulations, though. The commercials had to fit in the station identification time of 10 seconds. So the commercials had to be really fast, really quick. You need to have closure in 8 seconds. And the reason you had 8 seconds instead of 10 to close it is because the last 2 seconds was a shot of the Wilkins coffee.
Yeah, and in some of the Wilkins coffee commercials and others that were spun off from this series of commercial, what that still was also your station identification. Like for another regional brand, it would be WBZ TV4 Westinghouse Boston.
So from 1957 until 1961, Jim Henson, you wouldn't believe this, he actually made 179 different commercials for Wilkins Coffee. I mean, that takes a lot of creativity. That's a lot of mileage. And having to do complete commercials in 8 seconds, getting 179 unique ideas and compressing them into that period of time, that's pretty amazing, I think.
Yep.
And the ads themselves were so popular that there were regional companies in other areas that did similar commercials in the 1960s.
Yeah, I remember, let's see, there was Red Diamond Coffee, Community Coffee, Faygo Strawberry Soda, La Fontaine Bread, Merida Bread, and Crammel Milk, just to name a few.
Now, the two main characters in this series of ads, there was a character named Wilkins, the coffee brand, and he looked like a very rudimentary, very basic Kermit the Frog type of character, and even sounded like Kermit the Frog. So obviously, the voice came directly from Jim Henson himself.
So he's like, he was like an early version of Kermit, kind of.
He was a prototype of a very sadistic prototype of Kermit the Frog.
A very, very basic, very, let's say, beta version of Kermit the Frog. And then his foil in these ads was a grumpy character called Wontkins. Get it? Wilkins, Wontkins. Will won't.
Oh.
And another, I don't know if that was a beta for another, but I know that a voice was also Jim Henson because it sounded a little bit like Rolf the Dog. And, you know, Jim, he did the voice of Rolf the Dog up until his death, so.
Yeah, it definitely sounds like Rolf the Dog.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. He definitely sounds like Rolf the Dog there. And Wontkins, he was, how would you describe him? He was like almost like a triangular pyramid-shaped figure. He was sort of, skinny at the top and stout at the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And he was, since these are black and white, I think we'd have to assume what color he was. But it looks like...
There was a series of color commercials, and he was red.
Okay. Oh, I see those now. Looking at the black and white images, it looked like he was more of a blue character. And there's actually a reason I mentioned he was like a blue or purple. We'll get to that later, kids. And he was just the foil, the victim of Wilkins' constant torture, essentially. Because everything happened to Wilkins. He got shot. He had a cannon shot at him. He got kicked out of a tree. He got electrocuted. He got hit with hammers.
Got run over by a steamroller.
Yeah,
arrows.
Yeah,
shot at by a cannon inside of a camera. Oh. His house blew up.
Oh!
Fell out of an airplane.
Oh!
With a non-functioning parachute. If he was given a parachute at all.
We don't want to hear anything about how television is too violent nowadays. This actually was on TV 60 plus years ago.
Yeah.
But yeah, the conclusion of every, of almost every, I should say almost every, because there were a couple of times that Wonkins did not get punished for not liking Wilkins coffee. But the conclusion was generally, he's going to get punishment. He's going to be hit by lightning. He's going to be shot at with a handgun. There's like many things. He gets dropped out of a hot air balloon. So he's so much stuff he went through. I feel so bad for Wonkins.
Well, there was one where he wasn't tortured. There was one where he was behind a guillotine.
Oh, yeah. This was horrible.
It's like he wasn't tortured physically, but he was tortured mentally.
But yeah, you could have had your head cut off, but you know what? Because we're going to lower the guillotine. Oh, I'm going to change my mind. I'm going to have Wilkins.
I'll take mine with cream and sugar.
But I mean, there are also other times that I remember seeing that Wilkins didn't end up physically hurt. There was one, and this one I thought was very creative, especially for late 50s technology. There was one commercial where Wilkins sort of literally lost his head. I'm guessing it was through green screen tech. I don't even know if they had green screen technology back that early in the 50s. But
they had the technology to, you know, splice or an edit television. Just look at the Patty Duke show.
Well, Patty Duke show would have been a little bit later than even 61. That would have been like 63 or 64, I believe. But yeah, there's one ad where Wilkins' head came off like a ghost and started floating around and scared the absolute stink out of Wonkins.
He ran off. I think that was a Pepler's ghost effect, if I'm not mistaken.
I'll take his word for it. Whatever Pop-Tart's effect is.
Okay, Boomer. Anyway.
Okay, Boomer? Really? I'm 5 years older. Not even 5 years older than you. So, yeah, you're not that much younger than me, kid.
I'm like 9 years older. No, 9 years younger than you, Mike.
I do this out of love. You know this.
Yeah, at least Greg, you didn't call me a boomer.
No.
Jeez.
By the way, we're still trying to come up with an idea for Okay Boomer the sitcom.
I actually have a list of all the titles used in all the commercials.
Oh no!
All the titles, okay.
Yeah. Attention, bad commercial. The ball bounces. Baloney. Bank robber, barroom, because it's true, blowtorch, cleaver, copy machine, construction worker, drinking fountain, exploding brand X, exploding cigar, fire engine, flavor lock package, flying saucer, frontier bar, giant, golf club, good boy, good for smart Alex, Goofo the Great, gossips, got a dime, grenade, guy across the street, headaches of life, I got a bang out of Wilkins, ice skating, jailhouse, jingle in bed, love my Wilkins, magic wand, magician, Marshall Dilly, Martins and Coys, monster moving west, my dead body, what the?
Huh?
I've done the research before this episode. I can only imagine what that's like. Observation lounge, on the wagon, $1 without Wilkins, positive, rockabye baby, ship christening, smoke it, snicklier the swami, snowstorm, submarine, survey, taxi, thinking man's coffee, tired of commercials, tunnel of love, TV set, wake up, window, and you miss a lot.
Well, there's definitely more than that, because I actually also have list of names of commercials. These, I believe, are ones that are all on YouTube, because there are compilations out there. There's actually a very good compilation of about 15 minutes of these ads. So if you do the math, you'll probably get about, I'm guessing, 75 to 80 ads. And just some that you're missing that just come to mind immediately. There was one called Quiz Show. And remember, this is late 50s, so quiz shows were very big back then. And Wonkins was given the option, would you rather take this brand new car or would you rather have a cup of Wilkins?
You win a new car or a case of Wilkins instant coffee.
I'll take the Wilkins coffee.
We'll never get rid of that car.
I'll take a cup of Wilkins.
Man, we'll never get rid of this car.
Let me see. Some other titles that just ring a bell that you didn't mention.
Oh, here's one. $65. Can I borrow $65 for a cup of Wilkins?
What do you need $65 for?
What, you want me to go to the cafe looking like a bum?
Yes, that was a good one. There was as I mentioned, a hot air balloon one where the balloon was starting to sink, and Wilkins said, oh, we need to get rid of some of the weight. And Wonkins said, well, why don't we get rid of some of the coffee? And there was a trap door underneath, and Wonkins fell through it. Again, these are like really, you know, just rapid fire, you know, commercials. So, I mean, you've got 8 seconds to go from start to finish. So it's not, you know, highly detailed. There, you got to get to the punchline really fast.
Yep.
But one thing I noticed in the names of the ads that you mentioned, a common theme is just torture devices or torture, because I heard grenade, and I forget what the other one you said was. It began with a C. I don't know if it was like crossbow or
cleaver, coffee
cleaver, machine. Cleaver. Yes, cleaver. That's like, okay, you hear the word cleaver, you sort of know what's probably going to be happening. And that's the case with, you know, some of these commercial names that Chico didn't mention, like airplane. Well, we mentioned earlier what happened to airplane.
Yeah.
He got pushed out of the airplane without a parachute.
Yeah, next town's 5 miles. Oh, my God.
And then there's the bad guy machine. And basically, it was just some sort of goofy machine which, okay, determine if you're a good guy or a bad guy. And good guys drink Wilkins coffee, bad guys don't. And guess what? Wilkins doesn't drink Wilkins coffee. He gets pummeled with hammers. And then you have Bell, where, surprise, surprise, Wonkin's head ends up under a bell, and Wilkins hits the bell with a hammer, and his eyes come out all cross-eyed. And then, oh, blow up. Well, I wonder what happens in blow up.
Yep.
Spoiler, he gets blown up.
What?
Yeah, I know. But again, there's also some other ones that, yeah, he doesn't necessarily die in. One that I saw previously is called Cannibal Scene. And it has nothing to do with the cannibals getting ready to, well, they're in the cauldron, the pot, but they don't get eaten by the cannibals. The cannibals happen to fill the pot with Wilkins coffee.
Here comes the punchline.
The punchline was that Wilkins is finally going to enjoy Wilkins coffee.
I never thought I'd get you into a cup of Wilkins with me, or something like that.
There is a commercial called Club. Boy, I wonder what happens there. He gets clubbed. Climbing Tree, and he actually gets kicked out of the tree. And I think that's one of my favorite episodes, because you actually see Wilkins' leg kick back and kick him out of the tree, and you don't see any sort of like wires or anything connected to the puppets at that point. So they made it look very transparent even back in the day. Mm-hmm. There was nothing obviously holding these puppets in, well, it's not a real tree, but in this tree.
But that punchline, though. It's autumn, and the nuts are beginning to fall.
Oh, that was genius. That was genius. It's autumn, and the nuts are starting to fall. Beautiful.
And then there's one called Communist Store.
Oh, this one was funny. Yes.
This is basically a commercial that was built for its time. Where he asks, where Wilkins asks Wilkins for a cup of Wilkins coffee. And Wilkins was like, that's capitalist. That's capitalist coffee. Get me two cases around the back.
Yeah, so they did get a little political in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have another one called Hammer. Boy, I wonder what Hammer had to do with hitting him in the head with a hammer. And we mentioned Guillotine earlier.
And here's an interesting turnabout. Woken's on a deserted island, and he says, I wouldn't admit this if I wasn't on a deserted island, but I would love me a cup of Wilkins coffee. And then in comes Wilkins behind the tree saying, did you call?
And then knife thrower. And Wilkins is throwing knives at Wilkins. And Wilkins says something to the extent of, are you going to drink Wilkins coffee now? No. And then Wilkins puts on a blindfold. Okay, let's try this again. Throwing a knife at him blindfolded. I mean, there's just so many of these. I mean, I mentioned the number 179. I don't think all 179 are online, but again, you'll easily find there's a good 15 minute video on YouTube, and that must have minimum of 80 of these ads.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Just basically do the math here. 15 minutes is 900 seconds. Each spot is 10 seconds, so that's like 90 seconds.
And that's 90 like, ads.
That's like 90 ads, yeah.
Yeah, and the thing is, there is a little bit of a break between each of the ads, so yeah, I mean, somewhere in probably the range of 70 to 80 ads, and they're all just so clever, and really, it doesn't get terribly repetitive unless you see what the scene is. Oh, there's a guillotine. Oh, there's a grenade. Oh, you know, they're in a tree. You know what's going to happen. You know, unless there's a twist where Wonkin says, oh, you know, I'll try this coffee, or he just gets out of the way or something. You know he's going to end up in some sort of pain.
Well, then there's one that he doesn't end up in some sort of pain. Wilkins is eating like a bunch of ground up Wilkins coffee, and he's like, "I love this Wilkins coffee." And in comes Wilkins, says, "It's even better with boiling water."
And they also did ads for Wilkins decaf coffee.
I believe there was a fairy tale one for Wilkins decaf, where it basically ends up with Wilkins being knocked out cold. But then again, you knew that.
Yeah, these are definitely something you want to find online. This will keep you entertained, and definitely it's worthy of spreading on social media. Actually, I believe that's how we found out about it was. Someone posted it wasn't the whole 14 or 15 minute compilation. It was like a 5 minute compilation of these Wilkins commercials. And they were just so funny and clever. And again, you could tell it was Jim Henson, not just by looking at Wilkins, the Wilkins character, but also the voices. That exactly. I mean, you hear the voices, you clearly hear rudimentary Kermit, and you hear Rolf. I mean, that's obvious as the nose on your face.
Yeah, there's another bit of Jim Henson leaving his mark in that we all know he has this thing about being quick-witted and somewhat dark. But not, it's like dark, but it's the whole acceptable darkness, I guess. That makes sense, right?
I get what you're saying.
Yeah, and stuff like the dark crystal.
No, I mean, when I say dark, I mean a dark sense of humor.
Oh, okay, yeah, I know what you mean.
But it's the acceptable dark sense of humor.
I thought you meant dark, like, in the material.
Well, I did mean, like, dark in the material, but it's, like, it's the acceptable. It's like the Tom and Jerry sort of dark and retrospect sort of sense of humor, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, does anybody have anything else to add?
Let's see. We have the commercials. We have the fact that they were regional. We have the different brands that were used for the commercials.
Which we mentioned earlier, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, did you know this? You had for one tin of Wilkins coffee and $1, you can get, and this was back in the day, you could get your very own Wilkins and Wonkins.
Oh, yeah. That'd be something to have around the house.
Yeah. And guess what that leads us to? It's another installment of eBay Price is Right!
Woohoo!
All right, guys. I want you to listen very carefully because there are specifics here regarding which item I'm looking at.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. At the present time, I see two auctions on eBay that are active that are offering both a Wilkins and a Wonkins. Would you call it a doll? A puppet.
Puppet. Let's call it a puppet.
Okay. Well, yeah, it says hand puppets. So, okay. So there is one of each, a Wilkins and a Wonkins. And I want you guys to come closest to the price of the higher of the two, the higher asking price of the two auctions.
Now, do both of the auctions have a Wilkins and a Wonkins?
Yes, they do.
Okay, just making sure.
They are both complete sets. And I'm looking for the higher priced auction or the higher priced asking price as of right now. And I'll start with Chico this time.
Okay. I'm going to guess $25.
Okay, $25. Greg, what do you bid on the matching hand puppets of Wilkins and Wonkins? The higher auction. I should remind you of that.
I'm going to go $40.
I hope you guys are sitting down.
Okay.
The higher priced auction, the asking price for the set of Wilkins and Wonkins hand puppets is $9,500.
Now,
wait a second. Wait. You should hear the price of the lower auction.
Okay. Should we do another game for the lower auction?
Should we? We'll do that, and this time I'm going to have Greg go first since he won the first round. We're looking for the lower of the two auctions now.
Okay. I'm going to go $250.
Okay, $250. Okay, Chico.
I'm going to go $750.
Well, the actual retail price... Well, I shouldn't say the actual retail price... The asking price of the lower of the two active auctions, Chico's not that far off. $899.99.
Wow. Shut the front door.
Yeah, imagine if you had a dollar and a coffee can label from Wilkins back 60 years ago, and you held on to one of these. And the thing is, both of these are used. I mean, you can see some wear and tear. Not a whole lot of wear and tear, but yeah, one of them is going for $900 and the other is going for over 10 times that amount, $9,500.
Yikes.
But the colors are absolutely beautiful on both of these items. You see Wilkins is sort of a, like a beige color or tan color. And Wonkins is, he's a solid blue. That's why I mentioned earlier, you mentioned red. The Wonkins here is actually like a blue, maybe slightly purplish, but more of a true blue with a green nose.
Wow, that is really something, isn't it?
That would be great for the museum, but I'm not paying for it.
No.
Too rich for my blood. Imagine if one of these would end up on Pawn Stars or Antiques Roadshow. That would just be wild.
Well, now again, remember, this is the asking price. This isn't what they're necessarily going to get. Because the thing is, as far as I know, both of those auctions have zero bids. Yeah, there's definitely no bids on the 9,500 one. And I thought I saw two bids on the 899 one this morning. But when I did the search, it said zero. Yeah, it says zero. I don't know if it was maybe a third one that maybe sold, but the one that I saw this morning had 2 days left on it. So it was going to close, at least as of the time of this recording, it was going to close on Sunday night. Another interesting story to close out this installment is back in 1992, Jim Henson's widow actually, she actually physically attacked a marketing executive at a trade show. And why was the widow of
Jim Henson.
Yeah, I know it's Jim Henson. I don't know why is it John Henson.
John Henson's on something else.
He's on Talk Soup.
Yeah.
And Wipeout.
Neither of which are future installments.
Oh, never. So what enraged the widow of Jim Henson? It actually had to do with Wilkins and Wonkins. What enraged Jim Henson's widow is that one thing that Jim Henson was not terribly excited about doing back in the day was he didn't like his trademarks being sold or highly profiting off of them. And what happened is at this trade convention, there were photos of Jim Henson and the Muppets, and there are different promotional materials describing Wilkins and Wonkins as the original Muppets created by Jim Henson. And she really strongly objected to seeing this, and she saw this as an attempt to cash on the Muppets' fame, but also Jim Henson's legacy. And she got a little violent with this marketing executive at this trade show. And there were lawsuits filed regarding these images, including Wilkins and Wonkins. This case was eventually settled in the Henson estate favor regarding these copyrights. So, and on top of that.
So imagine the estate as Wilkins blowing up the marketer as Wonkins.
Oh, that's clever. I like that. Maybe the judge throws the gavel at Wonkins. I like that. And also an interesting little side note to end this show on. According to a biography about Jim Henson, Jim Henson didn't like coffee.
That's okay, because Wilkins also had tea.
Hey. Yeah, Wilkins did have tea too, yes.
Hey, me and Jim Henson have something in common. We both don't like coffee.
Well, that makes three of us.
Yeah, I pity you three.
Chico's going to start throwing
Let me bring out my cannon here. I'm going to bring out my cannon. Yeah.
Duck and cover, Greg.
Yeah. You know who else liked coffee?
Detective Cooper?
Oh, yeah. Agent Dale Cooper. He really loved coffee. And a damn fine cherry pie.
Damn right.
That's it?
I was going to go somewhere else, but then Chico went Agent Cooper, and I'm like, okay, I got to go on that.
I know what turns Greg's brain on.
Well, Dale Cooper likes cherry pie, and I like cherry pie, so.
But he likes cherry pie and a damn fine cup of coffee.
Yeah.
It's like, it's like Agent Cooper, Detective Hopper, and me. Coffee, mornings are for coffee and contemplation, my friends.
And whether you're drinking coffee in a 1950s ad with rudimentary Muppets, or you're drinking coffee with cherry pie on Twin Peaks, either way, it's still a thing on TV.
Yep. Indeed.
Oh, I did the closure for once. That was fun.
Yeah. Well, you can grab a cup of coffee and head over to itwasathingontv.com where you can find all of our past episodes. More about the show, more about us, and of course all of our social feeds. And if you like this show, then don't forget to rate, review, comment, subscribe, and share, because sharing is caring.
And by the way, before we go, this is the end of our current drop at Place to Be Nation. So I want to say, I want to give a thanks to Todd Weber at Place to Be Nation, who has edited all 59 of our shows together. And this is his final series of episodes that he is doing, editing it for Place to Be Nation. So I want to give Todd a big round of applause.
Yay, they're caught up.
Yes, they're finally caught up. So now I'm gonna be handling the post production work on the episode. So,
oh boy,
that'll be fun. But hey, after next week, it's only two episodes on the drop. So,
and those would be the episodes that are available where all fine podcasts can be streamed.
Yeah, yes. that'd be the current episodes. Yes.
Yeah. Yep.
Well. How am I going to segue into this the episode later this week? Until next time.
Oh.
Yes. Yeah. I'm going to say that because that should give a hint as to what show we're going to cover. And as we had been touting for the last week or so, the episode that's coming up later this week is highly experimental.
Yeah,
and we'll give the backstory as to how we came up with this idea when we do that episode. You're either going to like it or you're going to not like it. There's not going to be any sort of middle area. This is either going to be one that you're going to be like, oh, this is hilarious, or, you know, this might be the worst thing they've done. But we'll just come out and say that. We'll say, you know what, it may not be our best effort. It may be our worst effort. But it's an effort. We'll let you decide. You know, not every episode of every show is 100% perfect.
No.
There are things called bottle episodes on television.
So we'll leave it to you, the listener, once we get to that episode. But for now, again, thank you for joining us for this episode. And thank you for Greg and Chico, our co-winners of eBay Prices Right this week. you're not getting those dolls because I may have stimulus money, but I don't have that type of stimulus money to buy you
guys. I don't make Jimmy Kimmel money.
Yeah, you don't make Blake Snell money. Ooh, too timely?
Oh. Okay, we'll see you later this week with another thing on TV.
Row!
I love these Wilkins coffee commercials, don't you?
I'm tired of them.
Just kidding, Mr. Wilkins.